Tucker Carlson was right. Tucker came out on his show and said that he got information that the NSA had been spying on him, that they wanted to leak information to get him taken off the air. The NSA issued a non-denial denial. What does that mean? It means they put out a statement that sort of seems like they're saying they didn't do it, but they didn't actually deny anything. They basically said, Tucker's never been a target, and we only target foreign people. We all knew what that meant because Glenn Greenwald covered this. He exposed them. Edward Snowden leaked the information. Sure, they can spy on a foreign individual, but if your communications are somewhere in between, they can still get access. Plus, they're bulk spying on the American people anyway. Well, as it turns out now, someone leaked to a journalist at Axios who Tucker Carlson was talking to. He was apparently talking to people in the Kremlin inner circle, trying to get an interview with Vladimir Putin. If Tucker Carlson didn't preempt this story, the narrative right now would be Tucker colluding with Russians. I would absolutely be willing to bet that's the case. But because Tucker came out and said they're spying on our communications, working on a story, the narrative is Tucker was trying to interview Putin. So there you go. Somebody leaked that information. How did they get it? Even if they weren't spying on Tucker, who gave them the right to unmask him? Meaning when an American citizen gets captured, when their data gets captured by the NSA, it's supposed to be hidden. That means somebody went to a FISA court and a judge signed off on revealing a U.S. journalist's name who was trying to interview a world leader. None of this adds up, but I can tell you what does. All of the morons in the mainstream press who have so much egg on their face, you can make an omelet. Because they were for days being like, Tucker's so dumb, he's making it up. And now they're going, this is really interesting. I wonder how this information could have been leaked. This is something we should talk about. And people are like, yo, you were just, I'm sick of these people. So we're going to get into this. Obviously, I'm heated on this. Tucker was right, ladies and gentlemen. He wasn't making it up. Of course, they're trying to come out and save face by saying, well, we don't know for sure it was the NSA that leaked this. All right, just ask Jonathan Swan to publish his sources. And if the NSA was committing illegal acts, I don't think he should defend those sources. They want to unmask Tucker? Unmask the source. Let's see what we got going on. Joining us today is the return of Jack Murphy.
Hello, everybody. I'm back. It is a Wednesday, and we are now back on the every other Wednesday schedule. I'm Jack Murphy. So happy to be here. Follow me on Twitter at Jack Murphy Live. Sub on YouTube, Jack Murphy Live. Tim, great to see you. You were heated before the show. You're heated now. This is going to be hot tonight. I had a beer. You're excited. Ian's here.
That's right.
Looking
I'm drinking
good.
Coffee.
I'm back with lids.
That's right.
All is right in the world today. Wednesdays are back. Yes. Jack Murphy on Tim
wild,
Cast.
Wild animal.
I
Jack
am
Murphy
arr.
In the house. I'm disturbed about these secret FISA courts.
Oh, right. We're supposed to
yeah,
talk
we're talking about serious stuff.
Yes. Yes,
I've been disturbed about the FISA courts for like 15 years. I mean, when it was the first time that it was elucidated to the public that these
well the first time I really heard about it was Michael Cernovich breaking the FISA unmasking with Susan Rice in the Mike Flynn case. That is the first time I heard about it. Mike, way to go. That was me personally.
Yeah.
And that's how I came to understand how the FISA courts work and what it means to be revealed and unmasked if you've been sort of caught up in this snare of foreign intelligence work and they're snooping on people. This is just a journalist.
There's a lot to this. The Five Eyes Spy Club.
Yeah.
What that means. Yeah. How they cheat the laws and violate rights. We'll get into all this. We'll get into all of this though. We got Liz. She's pressing all the buttons.
I'm here in the corner as well. Whoa. I'm very intrigued for tonight. It's going to be a lot of fun. We haven't had Jack in a couple weeks. So it's going to be a great conversation. Tucker was absolutely right, and I knew that he wouldn't have brought this up without valid reason to do so. So of course he's correct, and I'm curious what all is behind that.
But don't forget. Go to timcast.com. Become a member. We're going to have a bonus segment coming up later tonight. This is usually where we talk about the things that YouTube doesn't allow us to talk about. But more importantly, we are hiring a ton of journalists. We're going to have like 6 or 7 people on the newsroom staff probably by the end of the month. Plus, we've got the paranormal show coming. With your membership, we are building culture. We are reporting news. We're going to be hiring fact checkers. It's going to be huge. So don't forget, get that members-only content over at timcast.com. And like this video. Subscribe to this channel. Hit that notification bell, which apparently doesn't matter all that much. Share this podcast right now. Take the URL, post it on Facebook, Twitter, whatever. Just share it. That's the word of mouth. If this is a story that you think is important, you think our conversations are important, sharing is the best thing you can do. And if you're listening on iTunes or Spotify, give us some 5 stars if you really do like it. Let's jump into this story. Here's the big breaking news. It's a scoop. So saith Axios. Hmm. Tucker Carlson sought Putin interview at time of spying claim. That's it right there. Now, for those that aren't familiar with the story, let me just rehash real quickly for those that are just tuning in. Tucker Carlson came out on his show and said someone revealed to him information that was in his texts and his emails that no one else had access to. This, long story short, said to him the NSA was spying on him and his communications. This is what was conveyed to him. He said the intent was to leak it to get his show taken off the air. As soon as he comes out and says this, of course, all the conservatives say, I trust Tucker. I don't think he's going to make this up. Not even just conservatives, just, you know, anti-establishment types. And of course, the establishment immediately said, he's making it up. He's lying. He's BSing. He's not being spied on. And the NSA themselves issued what's called a non-denial denial, where they said, Tucker's claim that we're trying to get his show taken off the air is untrue. Perhaps semantics. But they never outright denied that they intercepted his communications. And Tucker said he pressed them. So, or him or one of his staff said, are you reading our emails? And they refused to issue a response. All of a sudden, a story comes out that Tucker was going to try and interview Vladimir Putin, which means the story did get leaked. From who? I'd have to imagine Tucker was right. It was the NSA. Jonathan Swan of Axios can just reveal who his source is. He says Tucker Carlson was talking to U.S.-based Kremlin intermediaries about setting up an interview with Vladimir Putin shortly before the Fox News host accused the NSA of spying on him. Sources familiar with the conversations tell Axios. Now, how are they familiar with those conversations if Tucker says he didn't share them with anybody? Is the source actually someone at Fox News who's stabbed Tucker in the back? No. The person that Tucker claims, okay, of course, you can still say Tucker's a liar. But Tucker preempted this. Think about what would have happened if Tucker never said anything. The story right now would be leaked communications show Tucker trying to negotiate deals with Vladimir Putin or something to that effect. Instead, because Tucker came out and said he was working on a story, the narrative is now, while Tucker was claiming to be working on a story, he was talking to people who are Kremlin intermediaries. I think he ripped the fangs out. I think he calmed this one down. It was a smart move. And they dragged him over it. Now the funny thing is all these journalists that are trying to act like it's, I'm a serious reporter. Oh, it must be true, even though they were the ones dragging him the whole time. That's what you can expect, man, right?
Man, I'm a journalist. My number one job is to go to the source. My number one job is to get the best interview possible. Who would be a better interviewee than a leader of one of the UN Security Council members, the leader of their country, Vladimir Putin? I'm interested to examine a little bit more deeply the timing of this. It says here that they were talking to Putin now. It's about him right. Trying to get an interview with Putin now.
Yep.
So this is in real time. This isn't even Trump is in office. This isn't even during Trump-Russia scandal or whatnot. This is just Tucker Carlson going about his normal business as a journalist who interviews top leading world officials, and they snared him in their international spy ring that's coordinated against coordinated with multiple different English speaking countries, Five Eyes, right? And they were like, hey, we need to figure out who this guy is. So they took him to a FISA court. They made a case, right? They had to make a case to a special judge to say, this is why we should be able to figure out who this American citizen is. What could the case have been? This guy wants to talk to Putin. He must be a spy.
If it's the NSA, and I don't think Tucker's lying on this one, we've got his claim. The story gets leaked.
Yeah, it all makes sense.
It's not like the NSA's come out and said, here's the evidence, we did it. But it's all lined up. So I'll put it there. I would say it's beyond a reasonable doubt, in my opinion. But to be fair, there's a probability that Tucker is wrong about who's leaking it, where he was misled. Somebody at Fox may have leaked it. Axios has not confirmed whether any communications from Carlson have been intercepted. And if so, why? Think about what that means. What's with this weird doublespeak? Why can't Axios say, Axios has not confirmed whether any communications from Carlson were, why can't they say they have not confirmed that the NSA was the source of this information? What they're saying was his communications have been intercepted. So that means the source for Jonathan Swan may actually be the NSA. But the NSA didn't say we spied on Tucker. Just here's information on Tucker. Here's the point. When the NSA denied spying on Tucker, they never came out right and said, we are not reading his emails. We are not reading his texts. That's not true. They said, Tucker alleged that we were spying on his communications and were planning to leak them in order to get his show off the air. That allegation is untrue. Well, the allegation in that sentence is the final subject.
To get his show off the air.
Right, which could have been hyperbolic, or they could have been like, we wanted to damage him, not get him canceled, just hurt him enough that maybe eventually he does. Who knows? They can argue a million ways why that wasn't true. But they never said, we did not intercept communications from Tucker Carlson. We are not spying on him, either accidentally or on purpose.
Right.
They gave some weird doublespeak.
Or incidentally, right? Incidentally, right. Which is actually like the key word in this case, right? Because it's really about them spying on Putin, and they incidentally have discovered that there is an American citizen involved. Therefore, now this internationally focused spy agency can now turn their attention. This is all congruent with everything we've been talking about here for months and months and months and months and months.
The war on terror coming home.
Coming home.
The far right extremists.
Dude, we've been saying this for what? How long?
Check us out. They say
2003, 2006.
Axios says, those sources said U.S. government officials learned about Carlson's effort to secure the Putin interview. How? Carlson learned the government was aware of his outreach, and that's the basis of his extraordinary accusation, followed by a rare public denial by the NSA that he has been targeted. Wait. Hold on. Sources have literally said Carlson learned the government was aware of his outreach. He's basically confirming there's a federal agency in some capacity somehow that was aware of his outreach.
No, what they're saying is the government is spying on you, Tucker. Why are you crying about it? No one's objecting to the spying.
Right.
They're objecting to the crying.
Now I want to go back to this statement from Axios. They have not confirmed whether any communication from Carlson have been intercepted, and if so, why? Not confirmed. The sentence literally means nothing. So an NSA guy goes to Jonathan Swan, hypothetically, and says, hey, you know Tucker Carlson is trying to meet with Putin? I can confirm that to you right now, 100% guaranteed. And Swan says, how do you know that? Don't worry about it. Okay, I can't confirm they were spying on him, but he told me that. If it wasn't the NSA telling Jonathan Swan, why didn't they also add the source of this information is not coming from the NSA? No, they're quite literally saying Carlson learned from that the government was aware. U.S. government officials had learned about this. Who with access to the government was providing information to Jonathan Swan?
That is an interesting question, because it does suggest that there's a white hat and a black hat in operation right now, right? Somebody telling Tucker and somebody talking to Swan at the same time. Is it two different people? Is it the same person?
They go on to say, but let me read a little bit of this. The NSA's public statement didn't directly deny that any Carlson communications had been swept up by the agency. Axios submitted a request for comment to the NSA on Wednesday, asking whether the agency would also be willing to categorically deny that the NSA intercepted any of Carlson's communications in the context of monitoring somebody he was talking to in his effort to set up an interview with Putin. An NSA spokesperson declined to comment and referred Axios back to the earlier statement, carefully worded, it says. In other words, the NSA is denying the targeting of Carlson, but is not denying that his communications were incidentally collected. And Axios is not telling us who their source is, whether or not their source is part of the NSA, and they could do that. If I had a source who revealed that Jack Murphy had stolen my cookies from the cookie jar, and people were like, Ian was the source, I could be like, Ian was not the source. I can confirm that much.
Right?
Lydia witnessed Jack, and I said, I'm not gonna out my source, you know? But I can certainly say it wasn't Ian. That's one person out of the million it could have been. They could just say our source is not the NSA, mm-hmm. Is not in government.
What is Axios? What horse are they riding here? What do they want to see have happen?
I don't know.
How do they slant? How do they lean? How do they dress, as the tailor asks?
I mean, Jonathan Swan, he's the guy who did that really awful interview with Trump where he was just negative about literally everything Trump said.
Yeah.
And he was scowling the whole time at everything Trump said.
Look, we know that they are literally searching right now. Oliver Dum Dum Darcy and team, they're all searching for who's the next Putin, who's the next Hitler,
who's the next Trump,
who's the next evil guy that we have to destroy. And isn't it funny that the timing on all this just happened right now? Tucker Carlson is being named as, you know, if Tucker hadn't gotten out in front of this, what would the story have been? Tucker Carlson trying to collude secretly with Vladimir Putin.
He's the
Russiagate 2.5.
Yes.
So we already saw this absolutely hilarious story where Brian Stelter, in his pathetic, desperate attempt for ratings. So for those who aren't familiar, he's a guy who hosts Sunday mornings on CNN.
It's a little poo-poo show.
And
you
he was like,
see it on YouTube.
Is Tucker Carlson the new Alex Jones? yes. And then Oliver Darcy's like, Tucker Carlson is the new Alex Jones. The funny thing is Oliver never blinked. Did you notice that? I don't really notice, but a lot of people kept posting like, does this guy blink at all? Like he's just standing there staring at the camera. Dude's gone nuts. Like Oliver, these people, I wonder if they like cry at night.
Oliver, probably. I know you're crying, dude. I know sleep. You're crying.
We
know
well, Brian no, but think about it. Like they've dug themselves in so deep to this anti-Trump narrative that there's nothing they can do. They could call, guys, it was a big joke. Nah, their careers are done.
Done.
The only thing they have left is Orange Man Bad, but there's no Orange Man anymore.
They're trying to find one desperately.
Tucker Carlson is the new Alex Jones, they said. Did you see this clip? Did you see the clip they did?
Oh, with Stelter and Darcy?
Stelter and Darcy on the new Alex Jones?
Of course I did, because Oliver, I love laughing at you, by the way.
Tucker Carlson goes, he's like, there's risks in everything, of course, and even vaccines. And then it pauses, and then it's Alex Jones, you know, yelling about the vaccines. I'm like, those aren't even the same statements. Your doctor will tell you there can be adverse reactions. Like, that's normal. Then there's, what did he say when he mentions the spying? Then it shows an old clip from like the 2000s of Jones being like, they're spying money on me and it's been admitted it's happening. And I'm like, so you found three or four things that are somewhat related, but still kind of different. And you're acting like he's verbatim repeating Alex Jones. It was the most ridiculous garbage story ever. A few months ago, what did they say? Tucker Carlson is the new Donald Trump. And they did the same thing, showing Tucker saying things and then Trump saying things. And they're like, Tucker is the new Trump. They've been trying to do that nonstop. I don't think it has anything to do necessarily with politics, though. Partly, I'm sure. A lot of activists don't like that Tucker Carlson is influential, speaking to young people particularly, huge in the ratings, especially in the key demo. I think they're just desperate for an orange man. They ain't no orange man no more.
They don't know what to do. They don't know how to function unless they've got someone they can point to and say, Hitler, 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 Hitler. And they're going to try to tie everybody back to Trump because they really shot their wad on this.
You want it?
Right? Like you can't get any worse than the things that they called Trump.
Right.
So they got to now call everybody Trump.
It's funny that they've driven themselves so insane. I will say this. The things that worry me. Critical race theory in schools. I'm sorry, critical rate applied principles.
That's right.
Crap, dude.
Yeah,
it is indeed.
Yeah. Yeah, literally. Yes. So anyway.
I know, I'm with you, dude.
Yeah.
I'm just giving it back.
I know, literally. So anyway, that worries me about the future. But Michael Malice has a point when he says, look how stupid these people are. Mm. Look how absolutely stupid these people are. I got to tell you, they're really stupid. Let me show you just how stupid.
Just how stupid are they, Tim?
Okay. 2 hours ago, Axios reported that Tucker Carlson was seeking an interview with Vladimir Putin at the time he was accusing the NSA of spying on him. Stands to reason somebody leaked communications from Tucker Carlson somehow that he was doing this, and who would have access to it? Perhaps it was a hacker who broke into Tucker's email and phone and spoofed it or something, or perhaps Tucker is right. Tucker's source said the NSA was spying on him. Perhaps that's the case. Okay, so that was 2 hours ago the story breaks. Evidence to suggest Tucker is right. Pretty strong evidence. Gizmodo writes this story an hour ago. Hmm. Tucker FOIAs the NSA. That means Freedom of Information Act. FOIA means, as a verb, to file a request for the government information to see what they're doing. Gizmodo says, the pompadoured talk show host with a face made of Play-Doh has decided to kick things up a notch in his feud with America's surveillance Goliath. They say this. It was about 2 weeks ago that Tucker Carlson first claimed, without evidence, that not only was the NSA spying on him and his staff, but that it was plotting to leak his show's internal communications in an apparent effort to take it off the air. Not long after that, the NSA blah, blah, blah. The whole episode is bizarre for many reasons, even in today's day and age. Now it would appear that the new news anchor in his show filed an actual FOIA request with the spy agency in an apparent effort to shake loose any evidence of the government's supposed snooping. And they go on blah, blah, blah. I'm requesting records, the dates are documented. I looked through this story. Guess what? This dude at Gizmodo, Lucas Ropeck, did not even Google search or even go on Twitter before publishing this story. Talk about really. I'm sorry. I can't say the word dumb. I got to say something else. I got to say incapable.
Malpractical.
No. I don't want to say he did a bad job. I want to say that there's something seriously wrong with his like ability to add numbers together.
Flawed.
Like here's somebody who said, I am going to publish it. Now, of course, he can probably blame his editor. Perhaps he wrote the story earlier this morning and the editor was sitting on it. Let's call the failure Gizmodo's. But imagine being this guy and you don't go to your editor and say, news just broke that Tucker's communications did in fact leak somehow to a journalist at Axios. Perhaps Tucker was right the whole time. They publish a story insulting him, saying without evidence, an hour after news breaks, suggesting Tucker was telling the truth. That is a whole new level of failure.
Serious incompetence. First of all, Tucker Carlson does not have a pompadour. Just you're automatically trash. And by the way, yes, everyone who goes on TV has makeup on, except for me tonight. I wish I did.
Yeah, me too.
But the rest of it, I mean, who has a feud with American surveillance Goliath?
Huh. Everyone?
A
journalist has a feud with a surveillance Goliath. Like the end of the headline, the sub headline there, I was like, is it meant to make the NSA look bad and Tucker look good? Because that's how I feel. That's how I read it. Information surveillance Goliath.
They feud. They need their Trump man. And so this is Gizmodo saying, look, Tucker is our target. He's an other we hate. So just insult him. When you live in the world of corporate media, no, for real. I'm sure that they're like executive editor or their higher ups were like, oh, we got a story about Tucker, huh? Insult him a little bit. Rough him up because that's what our readers like.
Yeah, the big Plato. I hate that guy. That's awesome. Yeah.
I feel bad for – I don't know if this guy actually – sometimes the editors make changes.
I hope so.
Yeah,
I hope
well, that I should hope be in the article if they did. They shouldn't lay that on the writer if the editor changed it.
But who knows? Who knows? So right now it's on you, Lucas, because you got the byline. Imagine this dude, Lucas, right?
Seven comments.
He's like a little kid. And he's like, hey girl,
big break,
I want to be a journalist.
Big break.
I want to be a journalist when I grow up. It's like, bro, the story an hour before you published this broke, providing evidence. You got no context on it. Like
nothing.
You guys need to take this down.
Right. No retraction. No nothing. Because you know what? They don't care.
But why insult people like this so severely? Listen, if they said the far right or the conservative or whatever, I'd roll my eyes. But you're allowed to have somewhat of a framing device. I don't like it. But saying a pompadoured Plato face is just insulting the guy.
Tim, it's so obvious. They don't have an orange man. They need a pompadoured man.
There we go.
He doesn't have a
pompadour. He doesn't even have a pompadour.
It's literally not true, but it doesn't matter.
Hilarious. At least Trump was orange. I know. Bro was orange. Can we just admit that?
Yes.
Bro was orange. I
know. This article is getting read more right now than it has.
I know, right?
Stop showing them traffic.
Did you see the Donald Trump's press conference?
Which one?
The one today.
Yeah, it's happened today.
Dude was orange.
He was pretty orange.
He was so orange.
He is orange.
Look, remember when sitting by the pool and getting tan takes real time and effort.
True.
Homie doesn't have that time and effort. He goes in that thing and they just go
organic.
And he wears those goggles over his eyes. That's why he's got them little raccoon eyes around. It's a spray tan. I know it. It's all right.
Does he bleach his hair?
I mean, maybe.
Why?
It's his hair, though. It's all right.
But why would he want to be orange?
It's better than being pale. Have you seen Joe Biden? Crypt Keeper?
Yeah. Crypt Keeper.
When you can see the veins and the ligaments and the sores and all that. I mean, dude, bro's over 70.
Yeah.
Things change.
Liver spots.
You don't heal. Yeah, your skin looks terrible. He has calculated. It's better to be orange than to be pale and dead.
Yep.
Yeah. Orange is vibrant.
It's better than being like transparent with your veins and everything coming right out of your eyes.
I look at these news stories and I'm feeling pretty good when I see this stuff.
Pretty good about what?
The demise of the old media. Confidence in the rise of new media.
They look super professional here.
You know what I do love too though? I got to admit something else. Like we're pretty good at flying under the radar. Yeah,
I was saying that yesterday.
No, yeah, absolutely.
Who's
radar? The establishment. So there was an article in Axios talking about the decline of mainstream media and the rise of independent media, and they're talking about Crystal and Cigar with Breaking Points, which has been taking off tremendously. They get like 500,000 subs in a month. The show's doing massive, and they're awesome. So you know, it's awesome for them.
I don't even know who they are.
Oh, they're great.
Yeah, they were on The Hill's Rising. They're fantastic.
I'm living under a rock, apparently.
Yeah, you need to.
But they really are great. They really are great. It's populist left and right. They do a show together. They share like a populist view, and then they have their own views on left and right. But anyway, I'm reading this article, and I'm like, you know, part of me is saying like, why doesn't anybody take interest in what we're doing? Like, why isn't this on the radar? And I've been thinking for a long time how good that is, because it's actually one of the reasons I reduced the amount of segments I was doing on my other channels. I was doing five per day on one channel.
Are you down?
Yeah, I cut three out.
Oh, nice.
And weekends are gone.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Part of it was I felt like maximizing exposure was a weakness. It allowed us to get more ad traffic and operate the business off YouTube ad revenue, but it also created more exposure, which is more space to be attacked from. Mm. And I was like, we need to pull back. We need to focus more on delivering a better product and not focus on maximizing viewership. So that's actually in many ways a good thing. We fly under the radar on a lot of these things. So when I look at the media, they're attacking everybody like crazy. The way they attack Andy Ngo like crazy. And I'm like, we just kind of do our thing and there's no smear pieces. Sometimes
weird. It could be the milquetoast nature of your show though, Tim.
We're invincible.
That's right.
Milquetoast is the new armor.
And don't forget the Q and the E in the word milk.
I don't know.
I'm just kidding with that. Dude, I totally understand. That's why we created the liminal order.
That's why we hope.
So I can get off of the freaking, you know, the chopping block. All my guys can get off the chopping block. We can have constructive, productive conversations and do things inside the LO that no one can see.
It's great. Like this show, how many other like news people have people sitting there telling them they're wrong? Like I'll tell you. You're wrong. I don't really tell you. No, Tim, you're wrong. I mean, not really, but I will if you're wrong.
No, but listen.
People humble each other. That's what friendship is, and that's part of what keeps people
saying. We had Richie McGinnis.
I like Richie.
Telling his story about what happened with Kyle Rittenhouse. It's one of our most viewed segments ever.
Heavy.
We get no attacks. No one attacks us. No smears. We have Alex Jones on the show twice. We have Enrique Tarrio on the show. Nothing written about us. Totally under the radar. That's good news. Because we're going to be growing this brand, TimCast.com. We're going to be expanding. That's why I bring this up. I'm really confident when I look at the failures of the media. They're completely unaware of what's happening unless it fits the fighting. So when you see a lot of this like drama between... Did you know Fast Growing Trees is the biggest online nursery in the U.S. with more than 10,000 different kinds of plants and over 2 million happy customers in the U.S.? They have everything you could possibly want, like fruit trees, palm trees, evergreens, houseplants, and so much more. Whatever you're interested in, they have it for you. Find the perfect fit for your climate and space. Fast Growing Trees makes it easy to order online, and your plants are shipped directly to your door in 1 to 2 days. And along with their 30-day Alive and Thrive guarantee, they offer free plant consultation forever. This spring, they have the best deals online. Up to half off on select plants and other deals. And listeners to our show get an additional 15% off their first purchase when using the code POOL at checkout. That's an additional 15% off at fastgrowingtrees.com using the code POOL at checkout. Fastgrowingtrees.com, code POOL. Offer is valid for a limited time. Terms and conditions may apply. Steven Crowder and Ethan Klein, for instance. That's high level, like it's really easy for the average person to take sides and get into a fight over this stuff. But we don't really have all that drama stuff, so it's hard for them to write about. What are they going to say? Like, oh, you know, Ian,
graphene, the Fed, English crown, Rothschild.
Actually smoked DMT.
What do they got?
Right now.
I don't know.
They try, play magic. Sometimes something will pop up and no one cares.
Yeah.
You know what it is? I think you look at someone like Crowder, very energetic, and he'll say things about specific people. Ben Shapiro will do the same thing. I don't do that.
Ben Shapiro.
You don't play in the mud. That's a big part of it, yeah.
So it makes it very difficult for them to latch on to anything.
I think what you said earlier about what you use your money on as a corporation, like you get a big influx of cash, do you spend it on marketing what you already have, or do you hire or create new products and then not worry as much about the marketing? And the TimCast model so far has been that. Not worry about the marketing. We did that with Minds too. We didn't market the thing. We just built it and built it and built it and built it under the radar. Now the technology is so robust that it speaks for itself.
It's super robust. By the way, check it out with their new Matrix messaging. It's pretty lit.
Matrix.
I gotta say,
it's gonna, and it just keeps getting better. I'm feeling real good.
Yeah,
plus, it's a private corp, so you don't have investments, so you don't have the hassle of the public harassment.
That's the other crazy thing too. That's like kind of worrying me. People will come here and they'll be like, so who's backing this? And I'll be like, what do you mean?
What do you mean?
They'll be like, yeah, like, you know, Daily Wire's got backers, Breitbart. I'm like, nobody. I don't know. I started a YouTube channel and then hired people.
I skateboard, bro. That's how this happened.
I don't want to talk too much about us because it's more about the bigger picture. Certainly, I'm feeling good. And the success of TimCast.com and everyone signing up to become members gives me confidence in the future. It's probably the most the most like illuminating thing when, you know, when I hear Bannon and Michael Malice say like, we're going to win. And I start thinking about all the really bad stuff and I want to get pulled into that darkness where it's like all the bad stuff is taking over. And then I stopped and I thought to myself, do I really think TimCast.com is going to fail? And I'm like, no. It's taken off like crazy. Things are going well. Nothing's going to change. It's going to keep on this track of succeeding. It's going to plow right through the darkness and expand and then shove that darkness back into, yes, into the dark corners.
I feel the same way, man. I mean, we are going to win. Well, first of all, the other side has no first principle that is self-sustaining. Okay. It's just a self-destructive, mm-hmm, self-immolating, self-collapsing kind of process. Second of all, I can see and feel the energy of the building inside the Liminal Order. That's liminal-order.com. 600 guys all around the world. We're all working every single day to solve all these problems and make everything in our lives happier, healthier, and wealthier. These things are happening all over the country, all over the world. And you're right about being off the radar. There's a weird pull about social media and fame at the beginning, especially you're like, oh, it's, you know, fame, that's power. Yeah, no. Fame is a problem. Fame is problem. Power, you know, the ability, but by power, I mean the ability to positively affect change in the world. That's what I'm after. And that doesn't come with fame. Although I will say I got recognized all over the state of Virginia this weekend, thanks to Tim Pool.
I can give an analogy to everybody, help them understand. You ever play 4v4, Battle Royale Smash Brothers, four players?
Smash Brothers.
You ever play Smash Brothers? Every man for himself, four players. So you know what I do? I'm like, you guys really want to do this? You want to go up against me, Smash Brothers, but every man for himself? All right. I slowly walk to the corner and stand there as everyone beats each other up, and then I just chill. And then finally, when the last person's left, I'm like, yo, you could have come over at any point, but you ignored me thinking I was doing nothing. Now I got three lives. I got 0% damage. That's what it's all about.
Ugh.
You get mixed up in the fray. You take a lot of heat. You take a lot of damage, hoping that you'll come out on top.
Mm-hmm.
Not.
I have a good story about this. I met with Curtis Yarvin a few years ago when he was in sort of a quiet period. And he told me, he's like, look, you know, there's no point in encountering a predator animal as a predator animal on the savannah. There's no point in that. Maybe you guys fight. Maybe you clash. Maybe you bleed. And then maybe 2 months later, you both bleed out and die. No. The wise ones, they kind of lick, and they just sort of go the other way. And I have taken that to heart. That's what the LO, the Liminal Order, is all about. Taking your head off the chopping block, going underground, popping up when you want, being strategic about your appearances, about your public message. There was this time at which, starting with bulletin board systems and Telnet and ICQ and all these things, where you just put everything out there. Bro, just throw it all out there. Let's connect with anybody we can connect with, talk to anybody. Now it's like, okay, I want to strategically disconnect. I want to build barriers between me and the rest of the universe. And I want to have a highly curated, high trust environment in which I can actually get work done. I can change my life. I can change the lives of other people, my family. We can build businesses and products outside of the spotlight. And I think that that's partly, you know, the vibe that you're riding on here.
You know, it'd be really funny.
Do it. What?
It's like 300 years. There's like, you know, society is flourishing and there's flying cars and space travel. And there's a guy and he's the president and he's like, you know, vote for me for re-election. And, you know, what did I say? A couple hundred years. So it's like 23 something. Yes, yes. 23, 24, whatever. Yeah. And he's like, vote for me for re-election. And they're all like, yay. And then he turns around and he walks into the room and there's a guy with a Liminal Order on patch on. And he's like, you did really well.
Very good.
The order respects your work.
I mean, our goal here is we have a 1,000-year time horizon. You ever heard of the Knights of Malta?
I have.
This is what we're talking about.
There was like an ancient...
actual sovereignty.
What were they? They were like a military force that
They first came about to protect pilgrims on their way to the Holy Land. And in doing that, protecting people on the way to something important, they were able to build armies, they built property, they built sovereignty, they built their own nation. 1,000 years. It helps having the blessing of the Pope. That does help.
Yeah.
But absent that, we'll make it work. That's the time perspective that we're working on. And we're trying to be part of the remaking of society, right? Networks are the way the society is going to be functioning.
You know what the best part's going to be?
What's that?
So after this guy, like, he's running for president, he walks in and there's some, like, emissary from the Liminal Order, and he's like, you've done great work. Yes. The Order thanks you for your service. And he's like, thank you, sir. Then there's like some guy on the virtue net, like virtual net, and he's like, the Liminal Order controls everything. You need to understand how powerful they are. And they're like, oh, shut up. There's no Liminal Order. It's like, it started by Jack Murphy in 2020 or 2019.
That's right. It doesn't exist. Thou shalt not speak the name. First rule.
That's powerful.
It is.
Is it really the rule? You say the name all the time.
No, actually, I do. But if you've noticed, there's no one. You've never seen anybody publicly talking about it.
Oh, secret societies.
It is secret. We do encourage guys to not talk about it. Let me take all the heat, be out there as a lightning rod, and you just quietly go about doing your business of changing the world.
Let's talk about feeling good and confident and successes, right?
I like that. White-pilled me, baby.
So we got the media spiraling out of control, sad and desperate. Did you see that there was there was the ratings for MSNBC on Sunday? They get like 29,000.
Even I'm crushing MSNBC in the key demos, dude.
Bro, it's not fair to say you're crushing them when they're getting 29,000 viewers.
No, I am definitely crushing them. I am crushing network news. Period. End of story. That's what I told my mom.
Now, I'll be fair. During like weeknights, like Rachel Maddow gets 3 million, but in the key demo, she's getting like 200,000.
The key demo being 25 to 55 men with money, basically.
Old people are watching Maddow and Tucker, but Tucker's still getting twice what CNN and MSNBC are getting. So anyway, look, I watch the media's collapse, and I'm laughing because we're growing, and maybe we won't ever be as big as CNN was. But it's decentralized these days. Mm. But there we got something else. We got this big news from Donald Trump himself.
Do it.
Trump files a class action lawsuit against Facebook, Twitter, and Google for censoring him, demands an end to big tech silencing and blacklisting of conservative voices, and calls for punitive damages for cancel culture victims. He is also suing the CEOs of these companies. I mean, that's it. Now, he made his appearance. He was in New Jersey. Boy, did that man look orange. Mm. Very orange man right there. But hey, this is good news. Now, a lot of people on the left, a lot of Democrats are saying it's doomed to fail. There's no way his suit will succeed. That's not relevant. Maybe that's true, but that's not relevant. How do you win a fight if you never fight it? You stand there watching somebody poke and prod and bully and oppress, and you say, there's no point in fighting because we'll lose. Imagine this. It's like a bug's life. You know, what was it with the crickets?
Yeah.
Was it the crickets versus
ants? I didn't see it.
Grasshoppers.
Grasshoppers. Yeah. There you go. The grasshoppers are like, they outnumber us 1,000 to 1. If they find out the system, like, they're going to topple us. Everybody loves using that analogy to the left and the right. But think about it right now. If you're watching these grasshoppers kick people around, these billionaires, these tech oligarchs, push people around, and you're like, we'll never win against them. There's no point in fighting. Congratulations. You're right. Whether you what is the saying? Whether you believe you will succeed or you will fail, you're right.
Yep.
You're right. Now what happens if every single person who got banned said, I'm filing a suit? I'll probably lose, but I'm gonna file a suit anyway. Imagine if 1 million people filed lawsuits against Facebook. They would be buried in litigation.
So there was actually, I can't remember if it was Patreon or one of the other ones where they had an automatic arbitration clause. So that anytime anybody filed a complaint, they automatically had to go to arbitration. It was paid for by Patreon.
Yep.
So I remember guys like Vox Day and others were like really rallying people to try to take advantage of this. The thing about Trump that people loved and love to this day is that dude is a fighter. Okay. He will fight. That he's not going to take it. He's going to fight.
He made a lot of mistakes, though. He could have fought better.
Oh, of course. But he's at least trying something. Right? He's just trying something. And, you know, the first thing that you do in a lawsuit like this is you do the spaghetti thing. You throw the spaghetti up against the wall. Yeah. You cite all the people individually, all of them personally, all of their associates, all of the different entities. And then you force the other side into having to now make arguments as to why they need to dismiss this guy and dismiss that guy. They spend money. There's discovery. It's all part of the normal process. Now, I have no idea the legalities of this. Will Chamberlain probably be the best person to talk to about this, or Ron Coleman and those guys who know, you know, how these lawsuits are going to go. But I like the energy. Fight back, man. Fight back. They obviously colluded.
Right. I've talked to Will, who's very smart. He's a lawyer, so he knows a lot about this. And I've brought up a lot of things to him where he says, that's no good. That's no good. And I don't know. Maybe a judge will agree with that one. That right there, whether or not you get a judge to agree with you is the biggest question. Did you make a good enough argument to convince a judge? And what I've seen across the board, from defamation lawsuits to censorship lawsuits, is the lawyers have made really bad arguments because they fundamentally don't understand what they're talking about. Mm-hmm. No, I mean, no disrespect to a lot of these lawyers, because some of them have done good lawsuits that got thrown out, but they don't understand the nature of the system. They don't understand the attack vectors. I think Wikipedia may be one of the best one of the weakest platforms that could create a hole in the whole 230 argument and defamation specifically. So
tell me, I got Larry Sanger coming on tomorrow.
Wikipedia. When you go to Wikipedia.com, I love pulling up James O'Keefe. Let me pull up James O'Keefe on Wikipedia. Veritas
sure,
is probably about
I'm
one.
Sure it says very nice and honest and the true nicest. Things about
That's
James.
Exactly the point. Yeah. So let me actually, James O'Keefe has got a lot of bad things in it. It's framed, you know, kind of very poorly. But actually, let me pull up Project Veritas. Yeah. Do they have, there we go. Because Project Veritas, according to Wikipedia, is a far-right activist group founded by James O'Keefe. It produces deceptively edited videos, undercover operations. We've talked about this a bit. Like, I like using Veritas specifically because of it's all lies and opinion. What does this say right here? Can you read that?
From Wikipedia, the free encyclopedia.
Oh, it doesn't say from, you know, mega dude 539. It doesn't say from at Jack Murphy Live, does it? No. This article is from Wikipedia. Project
the
Veritas.
Free encyclopedia.
From Wikipedia. So who's responsible for that defamation?
I would say Wikipedia.
I would argue that.
I would say so.
And I think no one's, you need to sue on that grounds. James O'Keefe would need to file a lawsuit against Wikipedia for defamation, for libel, and say that Wikipedia called us, accused us of deceptively editing videos. Now, my understanding is he recently won over the phrase deceptively edited in the New York Times case.
Yeah, he's never lost.
The case is not concluded yet, but a judge said that, actually, maybe it wasn't the New York Times one, but I'm pretty sure he did win a case where he said it wasn't deceptively edited. I could be wrong, though. But anyway, I digress.
I love the way that they've got citations for far right and then deceptively edited. That's the way that they're going to get out of it, right? They're going to go to that citation. We're just citing
I don't think that,
major news sources.
I think an argument has to be made. You got to go to court. You know why? If Ian comes to me and says, Jack Murphy can't do a backflip, and then I go, Jack Murphy can't do a backflip. It's a fact.
Yeah, you're
Ian told me.
You're responsible for that if you did that.
Just because Ian told me, and then I go out and say it, and it's a fact, doesn't mean the responsibility doesn't fall on me anymore.
Well, I'm going to talk to Larry Sanger, co-founder of Wikipedia, tomorrow on Jack Murphy Live. Check it out on YouTube. Maybe I'll talk him into filing suit on behalf of all these people against his former company that he started, because I'm pretty sure he's not in favor
of
what's going on there.
We've talked to him about this.
Yeah, we did.
And I think the big distinction for Wikipedia is that it says it's from Wikipedia.
Yeah.
You can put all the citations in the world you want and say, don't look at me. I was just citing this source. It's like, bro, you said it was from you. So Donald Trump is suing all these companies. The establishment saying he's doomed to fail. The Knight Foundation saying he's doomed to fail, which is so insane to me. When did these freedom of the press, defense of the little guy, turn into the pro-corporate, pro-big tech nonprofits?
It was the Trump thing, man. It was Trump. It was Trump. All of a sudden, anything anybody said was bad. If you listen to the media sources you grew up with, the people that you trusted, all of a sudden they went ape.
Yeah.
And then the public went ape.
Could you imagine? Donald Trump runs into a burning building, comes out singed but carrying a box of puppies, and then Vox.com writes why puppies are actually bad.
Right, exactly.
Like, it's a picture of Donald Trump, and he's like, his hair's burned off, he's just bald and scarred, and he's like,
orange anymore.
But I saved the puppies, they're the best puppies, everyone agrees, they needed to live, and they're like, actually, puppies are a bad thing. Baby puppies. They have too. There's too many of them. People aren't getting them spayed or neutered.
This puppy has worms. They spread corona.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
This puppy looks like Hitler.
Oh my gosh!
And Trump saved him. What does that say about Trump?
You know, my problem with Trump, kind of what you said earlier, was what people love about him is that he's a fighter. Is that I've known people in my life that are have like anger issues and would like get really angry and punch a wall, and that's like the fighter in them, and it would break the wall or they'd break their hand. They wouldn't solve the problem, but they just wanted to hit and fight. And I'm worried that Trump just lashes out like irrationally and has no hope of getting them to change their terms of service. I mean, what legal bounds would anyone have to get a private company to change their terms of service? That's insane. That's fascist.
It's you need to set precedent.
Yeah, you would need to.
So Trump files a lawsuit.
But
it's spaghetti on the wall. The judge says
it's a fist on the wall.
You know, the allegations 1 through 100 are all bad, but 101, 102, and 103 are good. Bring us back an argument around those. That's how it goes.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't
that's what happened with the Covington kids in
code.
With defamation. They had like 33 claims. The judge threw out 30 of them. They were kept three, and then the company settled because they were scared of discovery. Mm. Now, I'll tell you what's really interesting about this lawsuit with Trump. There are actually a bunch of people on the left that are saying Trump that these companies should not get these cases dismissed. You know why? They want Facebook and Twitter to agree, basically let the suit happen. and then move to discovery, subpoena Trump, get him under oath, get his emails, get his documents around January 6th. Trump is saying, I was banned on this day for these reasons and I'm suing. Twitter and Facebook could be like, okay, let's get your emails on that day and see what you were saying to prove whether or not you had the intention that we thought you did. And then they get Trump's emails.
I guess we'll see if that's actually the a flaw in their strategy as they push forward with the lawsuit. I have to suspect, it's just the optimist in me, that somebody on Trump's team might have suggested that that would be an outcome.
Or it's actually really simple. Maybe Trump didn't actually do any of the things they accused him of doing.
Of course. Yes.
Just, and no, so Trump's like, step. I don't care.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think we know what Trump's emails are going to look like. I think.
Do you there?
It's going to be really like short,
yeah.
Lazy.
Does he even send emails? Didn't he say he doesn't send emails?
Yeah.
Smart.
I mean, it is wise. Yeah, why put anything in writing? You know when you're talking to somebody who's been a little bit paranoid is when you're texting and then all of a sudden you get an audio message.
That's me.
Instead of a text. That's all I do is I send audio messages now.
I don't text anymore. Yeah. No. I leave everything out of text unless it is 100% necessary.
30-second audio clips to say what I got to say. That's it. If you can keep those and share those, maybe fine. You're really putting an extra effort for that then.
I guess audio's better. At least there's context. Like
you can hear my tone of voice at least. Yeah.
Twitter doesn't work at all. Like, and I think this, I don't know if I'm just biased. Maybe that's the case. But people on the left, man, they really, really have a hard time. They have a really hard time. So like, Shuan had tweeted something as a joke, sarcastically, about, you know, I don't know, fascism or something. And then I responded with, so you admit it. That's like, I love tweeting at people, so you admit it. To like, the joke is, I'm taking what they say out of context to apply it's literal, and it's a joke. The people who follow me totally get that it's a joke. But Vosh tweeted about, so China just, well, I don't know about China specifically, but WeChat banned LGBTQ accounts, tons of them, wiped out all this content. And Vosh tweeted, this is the right move in furtherance of glorious communism, long live President Xi Jinping. Obviously, he's not being serious.
So you admit it, eh?
That's what I said. So I tweeted, so you admit it. And then immediately, I knew I had to do this. I replied with, in before anyone thinks either of these tweets are real.
Right.
I knew he was joking. Like, he's not praising Xi, he's making a joke. And then I responded with the joke, obviously. Bro, so many people were just like,
you're so dumb. Like, Vosh is mad. He's not serious.
Yeah,
so
Tim.
imagine if these people who are that dumb, I'm sorry, family, are your actual family, your actual mom or your sister or your cousin.
I know exactly.
Who are reading your tweets and taking all the jokes seriously and none of the serious stuff seriously. I'm like, you guys just have to stop reading. Just stop reading my social media. Because they think that the stuff that is specifically trolly, that is meant to push people away, that is, if you're in on it, is obviously a joke. And if you're not in on it, good, go away. They're part of the good, go away crowd. And they're like, oh, my God, what's happened to you? Oh, we don't even know you anymore. You're a monster.
Did a bunch of people, like, just eat a brick of fluoride or something?
Yeah.
Because, well, yeah.
Like,
dude.
Something happened where there's, like, people who don't understand jokes anymore.
But
listen, it's not about just understanding jokes. There are people who can't differentiate fact from fiction. So there's, like, people like us, where we're kind of skeptical in a lot of ways, we're well-researched, not geniuses, we don't know everything, we're wrong a lot. Sure, Jack, just, you're the best.
No, that's Ian. Except I'm talking about.
Jack's a genius.
Ian's the genius.
Jack's a smart one.
So I can be like, here's what I think based on this, right? I can have a conversation, like, let's say I'll have a debate or a discussion with, like, a leftist personality, and I'll say something like, when it comes to universal healthcare, you have an argument between utilitarianism and deontological philosophy, and he goes, I don't know what that is. And you try to explain it to them, and then maybe I'll be like, okay, I gotta dumb it down for you. So maybe I'll use a movie reference because you're clearly not at the same level, but I'm trying to communicate. And then they'll start laughing, being like, duh, he said Marvel. He's so dumb. How do you, like, you have these people that hear Brian Stelter go, Donald Trump is working for Russia or something like that. And then you get Chris Hayes, where you got Jonathan Chait saying Trump may have been a Russian asset since the 1980s. And they go, whoa. And then the Mueller report comes out. It's all not true. And they go, whoa. And then Rachel Maddow comes out and says, Russia again. And they go, whoa.
Tucker Carlson, Russia.
And then meanwhile, people like us on this side, whatever, are going like, well, something's not right. You can't just say both things. Like, which one's true, which one isn't? But I seriously think when you look at the Democratic establishment, these are people who either lying, many of them probably are, or are just too dumb to, like, actually do any of the work.
It's definitely both. I think it's both.
Look at, I think Ethan Klein is a really good example. Because what started the feud with him and Steven Crowder is when he said, bro, you don't even got to do any research. Just like, it's on the CDC. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
The kind of people who would be like, I have no responsibility and I don't care. They're going to go and be like, I don't know, dude. CNN just said, I don't want to do anything. Like, why do I have to do work?
I think that's an example. Like Ethan, maybe dumb's not the right word, but ignorant. He'll talk about things he doesn't know about, like what he just did about the CDC. Just don't even think about it, that comment. But he will also lie. For comic value, like just to have fun with someone. So it's both.
Do you think, like, so when he said, just trust the CDC, it's easy. Do you think if I said to Ethan Klein, yo, bro, the Tuskegee experiments, you know his answer is going to be? I don't know what that is.
He's like, they didn't make peanuts.
Yeah.
What?
That's just a joke anyway.
You remember that
getting things confused with Jimmy Carter and then the peanut guy and then the other guy.
He was a peanut farmer, Jimmy Carter.
He was. Now, listen, I think what we're seeing revealed by the left is their lack of sense-making, and they don't have a sense-making life cycle. So they don't actually have built into them some way of understanding and sifting through all the information to come to the right idea. So they've sort of discircuited. Is that a
dissociated
word?
Dissociated or?
Uncircuited? Is that a word?
Discircuited?
Dissociated?
They've stripped out the circuitry for sense making. They haven't, like, adopted this new skill, which we all have, which is you hear it here, you hear it there, you go over here, you look over there, you listen to 12 different people, experts, all of them, plus your friend and your cousin, you put it all together, and with actual research and independent opinions from people from all across the spectrum, you come to a conclusion.
Yes.
Now that's a process. Sense making is a process that comes through dialogue and conversation and experimentation. These people on the left are revealing that they have no sense making skills.
Right.
They just say a thing and they just move on from the thing. They say a thing and they move on from the thing. They haven't developed the ability to figure out what's actually real.
Yeah, you need to kind of remove your emotions from the situation.
You have to come to it with humility.
Yeah, you're going to be wrong. You're going to find out that things you thought were real aren't real a lot of times.
And that's why when we teach sense making in the liminal order, one of the things that we really focus on, are you hungry? Are you angry? Are you lonely? Are you tired right now? Because this is going to affect the way that you process this information that you're receiving.
Have you ever actually thought about any of those feelings even? A lot of people,
right.
No, but like a lot of people will just be like, they'll go to the fridge and they'll eat. And no one's ever stopped them and said, are you hungry right now?
Right.
And they'll go, no, I'm just bored.
I've been thinking a lot about anger lately. And like, what causes anger? A lot of times it's sadness or madness. And what causes madness? If you're not being listened to, if you feel like you're not being seen, you can become mad. And then if that's untended, then you can become angry. Anger's the worst. I mean, I think anger's like the worst mind state you can be in.
You know what they say? There's two things. There's two bits of advice. One's family friendly and one's not family friendly. The first bit of advice is eat before you go grocery shopping.
Right. Definitely.
Because people go in there and like, ice cream. And then it's like you go home and you're like, bro, I can't
I'll
eat any
an
of
olive. I'll eat a scoop of ice cream. A banana.
I just wanted the ice cream right now. So that's all I want. No, you're like, you eat a good meal, go to the store, and then you're like, I'll get a little bit of that. The other one is less family friendly, but they say before you go on a date, you got to go take care of business.
That's that clarity.
So you get that mental clarity. Right. Otherwise, you start thinking wrong things, right?
It doesn't always work.
Remove the sense of urgency is what we're talking about.
That's right.
Get good in the moment. Mm-hmm. Make sure you're not hungry, angry, lonely, or tired. Make sure you've squatted. Make sure you've slept. And then make sure you bounce all those things off people, a network of people that you have built. I don't think that these guys on the left have demonstrated any ability to sense make or to accelerate their process of observing, understanding, making a decision, and taking action, or the OODA loop, right? So observe, orient, decide, and act.
You know what I think about when I think about the left? It's collectivism. Hmm. The idea that they're safer if they're just part of this collective. They don't want to challenge it. Their brains just say what they say is true. But I think about the gazelle as they're running through the fields and the lion's chasing after them. Yeah, they're safer in a pack. Why? Because someone else gets eaten. The survival tactic is to run faster than the other ones. When you're in a group, the lion will get one of them, but it ain't going to be you, hopefully.
Wow.
That's the mentality.
And don't run too fast either. Right? Yeah. You want to be right smack dab in the middle. That is the safest place, is in the middle, where all of your friends, family, colleagues, and associates will get eaten before you do. Because that's what cowards do.
When you're in the collective, you're hoping that when the war comes, other people get killed and it's not you. But guess what? You may be that sacrifice. When you're an individual, it's all on you. You might die. You might succeed. The line might get you. But it's on you to choose what to do, where to go, and how to fight, and how to survive.
And what position is easier to be like, hey, let's go to war? Like the gazelle in the middle of the pack?
Yeah.
Or the lone one running on his own. Like, what should we do? We were just talking about this, about predators on the savannah. It's like, we've encountered each other. We can fight. We can maybe maim each other. Or we can just go like this. And just about our business.
I watched two bears go at it, and they bit each other's faces and, like, ripped each other's faces open. And then they were just, like, walking around breathing heavy, just bleeding faces. Like, what was the point of that? And fortunately, humans have kind of figured out why would we beat each other up and break each other when just weaken each other? Like, there's no point to
war happens sometimes. If you're dying and you need stuff, you got to take it from somebody.
I'd say it happens frequently. In fact, it's all throughout history ever since the very beginning. We are a warlike people. We're war people. We're warmongers. The Christians have a God that says, I am a God of war. I read this in the Bible the other day. Yeah. It's right there.
So is this
right
all, this, the so Bible, all this social confrontation, like simulated warfare, like psychological, we're doing it to each other?
No, it's just a conflict. Conflict comes in many forms. Yeah. I don't like collectivism. I've been in unions. And you know what? I've been held back by them. They cause me problems. And they always come back and they say things like, if it wasn't for the union, you wouldn't have X, Y, and Z. And I'm like, no, if it wasn't for the union, you wouldn't have X, Y, and Z. So you're advocating for it. Me, I'll do fine. I can leave and I got no problems to worry about. The problem I have to worry about is being dragged down, attached to heavy weights that are you and your group. I'm better off on my own.
Sounds like the public school system.
I think a lot of people are just like, I can't succeed unless I band together with other people.
It's really hard. Yeah. The unions thing is really hard because, look, at the beginning, unions were really important. They used to chain up factories. They used to let factories burn down. They used to not let kids take breaks. They used to make people work 8 hours, eight days a week, 25 hours a day.
That's different.
But the unions had to actually fix that.
I'm not saying that you never have any collective.
No, I know. I'm just saying modern unions. You brought up unions, and I struggle with this, right? Because they solve serious problems.
No.
And now they're creating problems.
Bro, you're talking about something else 100 years ago.
Same word, different structure.
Unions today are like corporate machines to siphon money away from dumb people.
Dude, I know who Randy Weingarten is, man. I know what's going on.
Who is Randy Weingarten?
She's the leading union rep for the teachers. And collectively with the NEA and the other one, they're about ready to say that they're not going to work this fall unless all students are vaccinated.
Yep.
Good. Schools are terrible.
I understand.
Teaching kids.
I'm just saying I'm watching this lady
crap.
Just destroy the whole freaking education market because she's advocating for what she thinks the teachers as professionals need rather than what the kids need.
I need to clarify something, too, because I tweeted that they're not teaching critical race theory. They're teaching critical race applied principles. And that was because somebody super chatted us. I have been saying this for a while now, and I was criticized for it. And I think people on Twitter, like, you know, James Lindsay tweeted this. I don't think they've actually seen or listened to my podcast where I've talked about this. I've criticized Christopher Rufo and James Lindsay for saying critical race theory over and over again. I respect the work they're doing tremendously. But when you say critical race theory, they come out and they show you the book Critical Race Theory by Kimberly Crenshaw. And they say, no student has been taught from this book. That's insane. And so you look at the interviews, and I came out right away saying they're not teaching critical race theory. They're teaching it's praxis. It's theory and practice. So I've long said critical theory and practice. It is the indoctrination through the ideologies of critical race theory, not directly critical race theory. And it's important to use language that specifically can't hide from, like perhaps identitarianism.
Love that word, by the way.
Identitarianism. Because then we're like, what's that? It's like people who believe that identity or race – right, specifically, should be the principal factor in how the rules and the lessons go, and they're teaching kids to view the world based on race. Most people are going to be like, nah, I don't like that. As a joke, I said, we need critical race praxis. I was like, it's crap. And then someone said, critical race applied principles.
I don't think we need the applied, because race has an R and an A in it, so you have your C-R-A-P, critical
that's
race
what,
practice.
That's what James Lindsay did. He put a little A.
Yeah, exactly.
But applied critical race applied principles are insane.
It's crap.
They're not teaching CRT. They're doing CRT on the students, which is a which is a very fine distinction. I understand that. But I'm going to have both Lindsay and Rufo on my show on first week of July, I believe. August. Or no, late first week of August. Thanks. Yeah. Thank you, scheduler.
I hope you guys talk about the delineation between applying the practice and teaching the theory.
That is big now. They're talking about it more, praxis. Yeah. But praxis is a word defined to confuse regular people, so you also don't want to use that.
Use the word practice instead.
They say praxis because it is a dog whistle that regular people won't understand. Mm-hmm. And their allies do understand. You need to use language. And I'll admit, identitarianism, a lot of people would understand either. The point is, that's exactly their tactic.
Let's just talk about this for one quick second, though. There has been amongst the people who are fighting this an argument, an internecine battle, as it were, about people saying that CRT is explicitly anti-white or not. And I would just like to interject some nuance here. CRT is definitely explicitly anti-white, but not as its primary goal. Its primary goal is to disrupt and to take power. So they're just sort of using the anti-whiteness as a way for them to take the power that they want, which is really to inject the false consciousness to do this class war that they're doing. So it's at once anti-white and not.
Who's saying it's not anti-white?
There are plenty of folks, actually, within the even on the right side who are arguing about
that's
this right now.
That's their trick.
That's just completely and factually
well,
incorrect.
If you were like in Nigeria
that it is or isn't, you're saying it is.
Critical race theory is rooted in critical theory, which is the idea of the oppressed and the oppressors.
Right, it has nothing to do with race.
Critical race theory, built upon the Marxist ideology of oppressed and oppressor, by introducing race as the primary component, not class.
Right.
Marx felt that there was the bourgeoisie, the proletariat, it was the wealthy elites versus the poor workers, and the critical race theorist said, these philosophers or these individuals did not understand racial politics in the United States and in the West, thus, we need a framework that builds upon their ideas incorporating racism from the United States, which is there are oppressed and oppressors, and the oppressors are all white.
But if you think of ancient cultures, if you were applying this practice like in Northern Africa where it was like a black population with a king and then they had like white slaves from like Italy and it would
Greece and Rome.
It would be anti-black.
No, it wouldn't.
Because you'd be like, the power structure is black, they're subjugating white
people.
That
is not critical race theory, you didn't read it.
But
they say whiteness is property. Literally the word white. Whiteness is property.
Well, then they would,
from the 90s. They wrote this a long time ago.
What
you're saying is, if they wanted to view race as oppressed and oppressor, it could be different. It could be, but they didn't write that. So if you want to make Ian race theory, by all means go ahead and do it, and you can build upon critical race theory. The critical race theorists have literally stated whiteness, they write books, anti-whiteness, whiteness is a problem. They said whiteness is a tangible physical property. It is an asset individuals have that grants them things.
Right. Well, you could also apply critical theory to race and it not be about that. I don't care what they call it. If they want to call it critical race theory,
so you're not talking about what we're talking about.
I'm not using the big capital letters. I'm talking about what critical race theory is.
No,
it could be about any race.
Okay, Ian, you're talking about something.
You're talking about something, a term they've coined.
I think you're both right, which is the nuance I'm trying to inject here, which is that the folks like Kendi and Robin and all these and Crenshaw and whatever, they are actually occupied brains. Their brains have been occupied by the class people, the critical people.
Right.
The people that want to just use the oppressor model to upset the power structure so that they can take power. Race is just a new vector. So all those folks are 100% sincere in what they're saying.
It's a trip up.
It is. That's why I'm saying it's both. It's both. It's at once neither and both at the same time, which makes it very hard and difficult to discuss.
There is a class-based divide. You've got the political class, the industrial class, and the regular people who are being jammed in the gutter and beaten down, having their jobs sent overseas. These people occupy seats of government through their wealthy connections. They should wear all the patches for all their sponsors. So what do? When Occupy Wall Street pops its ugly head, they say, introduce critical race theory. What did that do? It took that idea of class-based problems and flipped it sideways. So now poor people are fighting poor people. And yes, whiteness is a core component of this. It is inherently a U.S. ideology that seeks to address Marxist views through the lens of Western race politics.
What I don't get is if a kid is born, a white kid is born to a broken home with a mother that he never sees, that's so poor and his mom's a junkie, a heroin junkie. He's way less privileged than a black kid that's born to two, a man and a woman, affluent, yes, super wealthy, educated, awesome friends.
Of course, the number one privilege in America is I have a dad privilege.
Yep.
That is the number one privilege in America, which is why we should have a whole month dedicated to fathers, which is why June should be Fatherhood Month.
Mm-hmm. Just call it that. Celebrate it.
Imagine if we spent the money. Now, look, I have gay friends. I've got gay family members. I believe that gay people should be able to get married, and I have all the emotion in the world for them to have all the rights that they want. Pride is now totally effed up, okay? HRC is totally effed up. There are people that I know that are homosexual that don't even want to call themselves gay anymore for how screwed up the gay thing has become.
What do you mean? What do you mean?
Politically speaking.
The politics of it.
The politics of it. That they're gay men. They're married to gay men. They love men, but they don't even want to identify as gay anymore because the Human Rights Commission and Pride and all that stuff is so political and so hijacked. But imagine if we spent the money, corporate sponsorship. How much corporate money went into sponsoring Pride, which involves kink at parades in front of children? How much money went into that versus how much money could go into sponsoring fatherhood?
It's simple, bro.
And what kind of spillover effect would that have?
Don't worry about that. You should just tell all of your people to start celebrating June as Fatherhood Month.
I do it. June is Fatherhood Month.
That's right.
That's it. You build the culture.
Yeah.
And instead of people going like the government should mandate this, the government should decree this, like, we'll just do it.
We will literally do it.
June is the month of fatherhood.
We literally do it. It is my favorite month.
July should be the month of motherhood.
Yeah. Do it.
Let's cherish the feminine, the nurturing, the positive aspects of femininity that are being washed away by intersectionality, feminism, gender theory, and the critical race theorists, their weird overlap with gender. We should respect both parents.
I think that weird overlap with gender is a good sign of what I'm talking about, which is it's really not actually about race. It's really not about gender. It's really just about power. But it is anti-white at the same time. It is anti-white.
In its current iteration. You're saying there is no critical race theory that's ever been written that wasn't anti-white?
No.
Critical race theory
in itself.
It would be like if a guy came up and said, I've come up with something called race theory, which is how to win a race as fast as possible, and you went, actually, race theory is about the color of your skin. He'd be like, no. Like, I've literally created this. I've wrote a book about it. It's about running fast. And you went, nope, you're wrong. Like, dude, these people explained this very explicitly, what critical race theory is.
Yeah, but those are just three common words.
If you want to create your own theory of the same phrase to confuse people and tear away.
That's like, what I'm doing here, Tim.
And break away from the argument to give them power and to obfuscate what they're
doing.
I don't
like playing by their definitions. I think that's an automatic loss, so I don't do that.
The point is, when people say critical race theory is not anti-white, they're empowering the critical race theorists.
I see. Yeah, you don't want to say it's not what they say it is. You want to say it's something else.
Well, we need to know what it is. We need to define what we're targeting. One of the clever things they do is screw with semantics on purpose so that you can't fight it. That's why they're like, we want to teach critical race theory in schools. And you go, don't teach critical race theory in schools. They go, we're not teaching critical race theory in schools.
We're just doing
critical
race theory.
That's right.
Then they brag about praxis. And they're like, they've gone on TV and said praxis in schools and all that stuff. And regular people are just confused by that. And they don't hear any opposition to it.
Praxeology is like trying to state just like the natural occurrence or observation of things in the universe, right? It's about like just analyzing things as they exist. It's not about promoting something. It's not about an ideology. It's not about advancing something, which why for them, it's like a strategic retreat into something that they feel like they can't be assaulted.
Critical race praxis is the application of theory. Right. That's what it means. Yeah. So when they're in schools and, they're asking you questions that are based on this ideology, they're implementing the theory. The way I describe it is imagine if you went to school. Imagine if your kid went to school and they came back with a workbook about, self-improvement and being a better person. And it said in the book, explain why Jesus is great. They didn't read a gospel. They didn't cite anything from the Bible. They didn't say to go to church on Sunday. They want you to explain why Jesus is good. Imagine if they wrote, why does not having faith in Jesus make you feel sad? And then you have to write it, fill in the blank. That's what they're doing with critical race applied principles.
Right. The whole prompt is already right there in the question.
Yeah. At the end of the day, after you realize how racist you've been, do you feel good, bad, or very bad?
Yeah. So what they're doing is they've gone into schools, they've built curriculums specifically around this ideology, which as far as I'm concerned is a non-theistic religion, and they're desperately trying to use definitions to hide what they're doing. So if you go to and really the whole critical race theory and its applied principles are racist towards everybody, to be completely honest, but they specifically use the word whiteness, targeting white people as the oppressor. So what happens? If you allow them to change the definition and start defending them, saying, well, I guess it could be about any country, like in China, the Han Chinese are oppressing the Uyghur Muslims and the Falun Gong and stuff like that. So critical race is actually not that bad. No. That word, that phrase, that book is specifically about Western racial politics.
Right.
So when a little kid comes home from school and the mother says, what did you learn? And he says critical race theory. And then she hears Ian's definition. She goes, that's not so bad. But when she hears what it actually is, that little kid says, mom, you're evil and I hate your guts, because the book said white people are bad. Then she's going to be like, that's what they're teaching you?
So is it, when they say whiteness is bad, but you don't have to be white to exhibit whiteness, you can be a black person exhibiting whiteness?
Semantic manipulation. When you tell someone a white person, what do they think? Do they think a black person?
No.
Of course not. Do they think an Asian person? Of course they don't. They imagine a white dude with brown hair or whatever. So they're telling kids white, 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 white. And then when the parents go, well, why are you telling kids that white people are evil? No, we don't mean your skin. We mean just like the people with power. And they go, oh, okay, I guess. It's a way to manipulate people, but it's very simple. When they say whiteness and they say blackness and they say black and brown, there's no argument that they're not talking about white people. They say black and brown people. Are they referring to Luke Rydkowski, who's got blonde hair and blue eyes? Apparently he's Slavic, so that counts. No, of course not. If Luke was walking down the street, they would say he was white. And if he argued against them, at the very least, they would say, you're white passing. They tell me, I'm white passing, therefore I have white privilege. But it's not about being white. It's about the concept of whiteness. No, it isn't. That's a lie. To trick dumb parents who don't realize their children are being indoctrinated to be identitarians, to effectively be akin to Nazis. Authoritarian, race-based policy. Screw that.
I think one of the ways that's obvious that it's about power more than anything is the way that they just took everything about America and then they said, this is whiteness and it's bad.
Right.
It's like, we want to destroy this country and take it over for ourselves, and we want all the money and we want all the prestige and we want all the benefits. So what do? We say, oh, all the things that made America great, we call them white now. And now we call them racist.
Yep.
You had mentioned before that the United States was a white religious ethno state, basically in its formation. The point.
I mean, basically, it says right there in the original founding documents that we've created this country for us and for our posterity. And who was it created by? And
they call the Native American savages.
Mm. Yeah. Who was it created by? It was created by a bunch of white guys. Yeah, sure. There were some Catholics in Maryland. There's some Protestants up in New England. But basically, it was a bunch of white dudes. And it says right in the document. Posterity. What does that mean for our kids?
And black people are like, we're 3/5 of a human or something.
Look,
for
this
voting. That came later.
This is a really difficult thing. I mean, clearly it's difficult, but like those folks wouldn't have been in the United States if it wasn't for the fact that for slavery, right? They just wouldn't have been there.
Thomas Jefferson blamed the king for that.
He said slavery on the king.
The original draft of the Declaration, one of the complaints he had was that the king had enacted the transatlantic slave trade, violating human decency by enslaving people who had not offended him in any way, and then brought them to the colonies, imposing that evil upon the colonies, and then asking them to take up arms against the colonists who in exchange for the freedom that was stolen from them.
Wow.
Right. It was removed.
Those are all true. That's
it
all
was
true.
Removed because Thomas Jefferson, because the founding fathers knew they needed the support of South Carolina and Georgia if there was going to be an actual fight for independence. They thought they were going to lose anyway. I think it's really sad that he didn't include that. And I also say, a bit hypocritical of the guy, because on his deathbed, he didn't free any of his slaves, and he had a ton, over 600. So the point is, bro, there are a lot of people who came out and were saying, like, they were offended that people had criticized the founding documents. And NPR said the founding documents had flaws, and I'm like, sure, yeah. But it planted great seeds, and through those seeds of freedom, we fought, and Abraham Lincoln cited the founding fathers' ideas as to why we're all created equal, and Frederick Douglass said, I want to make you live up to your own standards. Brilliant. So some guy plants a fugly seed, and through cultivation and nurturing, we've developed a very beautiful crop. It's been amazing. Now they're trying to go back and say, look how bad this was in the beginning. yeah, well, we've kind of fought really hard to fix all those things.
Right. Right, and I think that we ended like the transatlantic slave trade pretty early and banned a new sales, and like we're constantly making progress on that from the jump at the very beginning. And this is the part that is just infuriating. You can see it in every instance. They take today's standards and try to apply them to somebody from 400 years ago. When the best you can ask of somebody in history is, did you make some element of incremental change?
Yeah, and even like 5 or 6 years ago, don't use today's rules and beliefs right. to blame people for things they said on the internet 8 years ago. Right. Like we Cenk Uygur screaming the N-word 10 years ago. It was fine.
Yeah, he did a lot.
Yeah, it was comedy. Yeah. I mean, George Carlin, Andrew Dice Clay, these guys would be, their families would be canceled if we held them to today's standards.
I don't know how the Young Turks still exist. The name of their program is effectively the Hitler Youth.
Dude, I was just reading about the Armenian genocide during World War I. The Ottoman Empire had this group called the Young Turks that basically took all these Armenians and marched them south, and millions, 1.6 million Armenians died in this. And they still to this day say that wasn't a genocide.
If there's any like good example of grifting, I think it's definitely the Young Turks. Glenn Greenwald, Jimmy Dore, Aaron Matei, there's been this big feud going on between the Young Turks and them. And Cenk Uygur comes out and tweets, it's the alt-left. And they made these false, out-of-context accusations, which then the alt-right started saying. And I'm just like, bro, the alt-left was a nebulous term from a few years ago. People tried to work, and no one really uses it. And the alt-right has literally nothing to do with why people don't like you. Cenk Uygur accused Aaron Matei of being paid by the Russians. And Anna Kasparian said something like, he seems to be working for dictators. It was a smear because they didn't like that he was the journalism he does. It sparked this huge feud. I gotta say, you look back at the history of the Young Turks, the things Cenk Uygur has said about women, he got canceled from the Justice Democrats over it. The videos of him talking about women and their junk and insulting, like this, the things he said, I actually don't care. Like, he's allowed to have his opinions, and oftentimes he was joking, but he's dropped racial slurs repeatedly. The name of their show is effectively the Hitler Youth, yet they just don't care. They don't care. So when he comes out and he's like, these are unfounded accusations against us, I'm like, bro, you literally work for a company that's like effectively praising genocide. You know, like you've named yourself after a group that committed a genocide. You know, I don't think you're serious when you're talking about reform and how people change, because you didn't.
Well, I don't know. I mean, he has. I don't hear him screaming the N-word anymore. But my original point, I guess, is just whatever. People said crazy stuff in the past. Let it go. Today is today. It's a different political climate.
Look, this is my point. Here's a guy who won't change the name of his company. And he could.
He could.
Here's a guy who went on
the old
and
Turks.
Defended child stripping. He did. Oh, of course, they'll call it something else. I don't care what they call it. The fact is, there's a little kid who was at a club full of adults taking his clothes off, and they were throwing money at him.
Getting money, yep.
He still had undergarments on. But it was a little boy, and they did a whole segment defending it, probably more than one. Jordan Klepper of Comedy Central did that as well. And I'm like, at a certain point, you realize what these people do. They're not progressive. They're just their path of least resistance. When the media says you're allowed to make these jokes, it's edgy and it's fun. Oh, they go on. They say every racial slur in the book. They make fun of women. They show that they were talking about bottom shots of women climbing out of cars. That's one thing they're getting heat for. Nowadays, they're like, we won't do that because we're principled and we oppose misogyny. No, you don't. You're literally just saying lowest common denominator left talking points to fit in.
They're comedians.
Your opinions
right?
didn't change. No, they're
news
presenters.
Jimmy Dore on there. He's a comedian.
Yeah, they're
up.
Not. They're news are. Presenters.
That's what they call themselves.
I'll tell you this. When I have a video from 6-7 years ago where I'm like, segregated graduations are a bad thing. And today I'm like, segregated graduations are a bad thing.
You hypocrite. You have the same position.
Right.
Using a different definition for the word segregated.
Now, hold on. I have positions that have changed. I used to be like, gun control maybe. Now I'm like, no gun control. Boom, free guns for children and things like that. That's not a path of least resistance for anybody. The popular mainstream narrative is to be for gun control. If anything, I've become more contrarian in opposition. They've become more establishment, say whatever needs to be said. We'll just say whatever.
You know,
they've got no opinions.
I want to ask Cenk about 2016 when Hillary's emails came out and it showed that they were like pushing Bernie Sanders out of the race. Because that was when I saw Cenk, like something snapped in his brain and he became almost sociopathic, like having a hard time accepting the DNC. I mean, I know he knows that there's corruption at DNC, but I want to just go deep on his brain about that.
I'll give him some credit. He recently did an interview with The Hill where he said the Democratic establishment just lies all the time. Yes. He's completely correct about that. I just think his whole bit is stay where it's safe all the time. And so when he's like, we're changing our opinions for principle, it's like, no, you're not. You're just staying in the safe. You're staying in the safest possible place you can. When edginess was fun, you were in it. Now it PC, you're in it. So do something counter for once.
That's interesting perspective on the Overton window for them. Yeah?
Yeah.
The Overton window for them has moved dramatically to now where even these guys that are leftists, who used to make jokes all the time about language and be what we would consider non-politically correct today. Now the Overton window has shifted so far that they have to disavow like their entire back catalog and just adopt a whole new system of language and thought in order to stay acceptable. That's what you get when you're trying to stay inside the Overton window. You know what's more fun? Pushing the Overton window in different directions. That's more fun.
I love it. I'll absolutely stand up for myself and my principles. I criticized Andy Ngo over him going on the ground into the fray with Antifa. Long story short, I expressed my views and I got a lot of flack for it. And I got called a grifter with no principles for what? Was I trying to build a leftist audience? These people hate me. No, it's because I'm standing up for what I believe in, even if it's unpopular. Even if it's a threat to my, like, even if there are people who follow me like, I'm going to unfollow you. I'm like, look, man, I can only tell you how I feel. I made a tweet about anonymity, and people took it out of context.
That was funny.
And I'm just going to say what I think, dude. And if you don't want to hear it, I'm sorry. Like, you don't have to. You're not
somewhere else.
You know, I appreciate you guys watching if you did. But if you want to watch someone who's going to say tribalist opinions, go watch The Young Turks.
It's funny. I do the same thing, and people will accuse me of punching right or being a grifter or being controlled opposition.
Oh, yeah.
That's a good one. Controlled opposition. I love it when I get that one because basically it just means somebody on the far right doesn't like the fact that I'm boxing them out and saying, no, we don't really want you over here. You're hurting us. This big tent does not include you. Okay. And then they call me controlled opposition, which is hilarious. Like, how am I being controlled? What are they giving me? Are they giving me access and prestige? Can I have my blue check, please?
Yes.
I got denied. Are they giving me money and support and resources? No. Are they giving me distribution? No. Are they shadow banning me? Yes. Are they signing my shares and all that? Yes. How am I controlled opposition? It's a non thing.
You're the Trojan horse. That's what I think of myself. You've allowed yourself to become what seems like, you know, safe, but then when they let you into the city, that they realize you were there to
I mean, that I kind of feel like system. That's what I'm trying to do now. I've reached such a bigger audience, a more mainstream audience, that I can drop like red pill stuff from 10 years ago, and it's like just old hat stuff that we got so tired of even talking about, mm-hmm. that now I'm in an audience now where it's like fresh news to people.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's fascinating, actually. It's like, oh, my life's very easy. I just have to remember what we were talking about 2010, and now the mainstream is actually ready for that in 2021 because mm-hmm. all the things that we said were happening at that time back in 2010, all the crazy feminist conspiracies and all that, it's all come true.
I got something to say to the Young Turks. You know, Cenk said, he called Jimmy Dore a monster.
Let's fight. That's what
I saw Cenk Uygur at Politicon a couple years ago, and they had published, they did a video about this fake bit of research claiming that it's called the Alternative Influencer Network. They put my name right in the middle. It was the most ridiculous BS. They claimed that I had done interviews with people I'd never met before. They claimed that I did a YouTube video with Stefan Molyneux. I'd never met the guy. And so when they did a video and they show the screenshot, my name's in the middle, I saw Cenk standing in a hallway and I was like, hey, you got a second? And he's like, oh, hold on, I'm busy. And he was talking to someone. And after he's done, I was like, hey, I just wanted to mention, like, you guys, I DM'd you about this. Because I'd seen him at VidCon before and we were talking and I was shaking his hand. I told him that I had bought ads on his channel before and YouTube was, like, stifling him. And so I was like, hey, you guys did this video about the Alternative Influencer Network or something that included me. Like, I don't know what your beef is with Dave Rubin or anything. I just don't want to be involved. And he was like, I don't know what you're talking about. And I was like, dude, I'm trying to ask you to like not include me in it. And then all of a sudden he snapped, started screaming at me. What happened to you, man? You have changed. Well, he's yelling at me on all this. Everyone starts filming and I'm like, why are you yelling at me? I didn't say anything mean to you ever at all. In fact, I was being respectful to him on YouTube as well. Dude snapped, claimed I changed. So I got a message. If Dave Rubin, Jimmy Dore, Tim Pool, Glenn Greenwald, Michael Tracy, Aaron Mattei are all changing around you, maybe it's you who need to check your boot. Maybe you're surrounded by sycophants who are just blowing smoke up your ass and telling you what you want to hear. And the people who leave your presence all of a sudden are like, yo, you're nuts. Jimmy Dore leaves the Young Turks and all of a sudden he's like, here's what's happening. And Cenk's like, why did he change? And Dave Rubin leaves the Young Turks. Why did Dave change? I was never anything to do with the Young Turks, but all of a sudden, Cenk is shocked. Tim Pool changed. Preach Glenn Greenwald, what happened to you?
Preach it
to
him.
No. Nothing happened to us. Something happened to you. Look at your old videos. You're just saying what is safe for the establishment. And I think that's true of Ethan Klein as well. Mm. Dude used to be edgy. Now he's safe. They're too scared to risk anything, to stand up for anything. You don't have to. That's fine by me. You want to protect your network and you want to be some kind of progressive, channel and just say whatever the tribe wants you to say. Fine. That's fine. But stop acting shocked when everyone else who leaves your presence starts saying things that shock you. Because it may just be that you are surrounded by yes men and still are.
Yeah. You know, it's a much easier brand image to maintain. One of seeking knowledge or truth. Oh, that's the brand. Oh, which means I'm going to change and evolve. That's all part of the plan. We're on a journey. We're trying to discover the truth. We're trying to learn what's really happening. We're trying to create a mental model of the world that makes it so we're not insane. That's much easier than to say, I'm an ideologue on this idea and I can't change. They box themselves. I'm not trying to make them seem any better than they are, but they're boxed in. And anybody on the right is the same way, totally boxed in. If you haven't set yourself up in a way that you're just going to evolve, which is what humans do, which is a totally natural thing to do. Yes, I have more information on that matter, so my opinion has changed. Whoa, that's crazy.
My opinion changed quite a bit, talking to Michael Malice. And people like libertarians are tweeting at him like, you got Tim, good job. Because I was like, abolish the police. Bro, I'm like watching cops confiscate guns from law-abiding citizens to uphold. Yeah, I'm watching these ridiculous laws. I'm watching the Capitol Police.
So, dude, you're the one that they were referencing when they said that the right was claiming that they needed to defund the police. Remember that? Mm-hmm. When the press secretary gets up there and she's like, it's been the Republicans and the conservatives trying to defund the police this entire time. Blah, 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 blah. They're talking about you, man.
No,
1 million views an episode. I was there.
They're just trying to lie,
January
right?
6th, Michael
but
Malice.
Here's my point. Capitol Police, D.C. Capitol Police are setting up field offices in California and Florida. They're expanding nationwide. The Capitol Police issued a press release saying they're going to be expanding into an intelligence-based protective agency.
What?
Yeah, because the war on terror is coming home. So my stance has been not the same as the left, that they're evil oppressors and shut them down. It's that now the good cops are leaving. And the cops who are staying are a lot of them are dirty.
No, the good cops, ya se fueron, Spanish, they already left.
Right.
They're gone.
So let's not sit back and be like, defend the institution. I'm like, nah, because now you're going to get Capitol Police hunting down, quote unquote, patriots. Here's my prediction. I could be wrong about this, but I'll give you a prediction.
Oh, thank God I didn't go that day.
Capitol Police.
Yeah.
Capitol Police are investigating and the feds are tracking down the people who went in the building. The Capitol Police are setting up field offices. Do you think this will stop? Or do you think that once they get the 600 people, they're going to say, now we're going to go after those who provided material to support to these people?
Oh, no, dude, we have a very extreme, hardcore, concrete, bulletproof example of the way the government, once they set up these kind of things, they shut them down in due time, right? They did this thing in Cuba, Guantanamo Bay. They set it up right after 9/11. They put prisoners in there. They closed it down as soon as they were done. And then that was it. Wait, what?
Oh, no, it's still open.
Wait, I'm sorry. Wait, what was that?
Wait, they didn't close down
wait,
Guantanamo?
Wait, Guantanamo is still open? Oh,
I remember, honestly. Crazy. I remember when I was in New York when they announced that they got Osama. And Obama came out and he was like, the war on terror is over. And I was like, wow, they just ended it. Hey. Oh, wait, that didn't happen either.
No.
So here's
did
my...
He, wait, wait, did he really say that?
No.
Oh, I was like, they didn't assassinate him the next day?
So... Here's what I'm saying. The Capitol Police, they're going to go after the rioters.
Oh,
then they're going to say the people provided material support. Then they're going to say we need to expand more offices to stop, to be preemptive, to prevent these things from happening ever again. The war on terror comes home.
Right. And then when they actually talk to a guy like Omar Mateen and they know that he wants to go around killing people, they're just going to let him go because that's actually not what they're really after.
What'd that guy do?
Oh, he shot up the Orlando nightclub, which wasn't actually a gay motivated thing. He was just like nearest nightclub, and it turned out to be that one full of gay people, and so it became like a gay massacre when really it wasn't.
Yeah, never let a tragedy.
He was a like a a person of interest or whatever, a technical term, probably not use that right, to the FBI. They knew him in advance. He scoped out that nightclub. He murdered the people in there, and then they retrofitted it to be like a gay attack.
I can't remember who it was, but someone said that they said the United States needed some kind of 9/11-like attack, in their opinion, this was a Republican, to remind people why we have the security state.
Wait, they said this after 9/11?
Yeah. They were like, it's almost like we just need it to happen so that people remember exactly what, you know, we're fighting for or whatever, something like that.
I mean, look, it's funny. Like, we've been on top of this for a long time. We've been, you know, have you talked to Cash? I talked to Cash Patel also, who was on the National Security Council, head of counterterrorism. I asked him point blank, is there any evidence that white nationalism, terror is the biggest threat facing America? Zero, none. This was the guy, number one National Security Council in charge of counterterrorism. The chief of staff for the Secretary of Defense. This guy was in there. He has all the intel. And also, he'd be the first person to complain about this FISA crap with Tucker, because he used FISA to actually go after terrorists. So he knows.
This is why.
Nothing. We've been talking about this. I'm sorry, just finish this thought. We've been talking about this for years, basically. Right. And now it's actually happening, and we still have to talk about it because not everybody knows. I feel like we're banging on a broken drum. No, that doesn't work, my mixed metaphor.
This is why I feel like there are two great possibilities of either an authoritarian takeover or a civil war. Because you look at what they're saying about white supremacy in the far right, which is just fundamentally absurd and not true. What they're saying about insurrection, it's the 6-month anniversary, and the guy's like holding up his suit. He's like, this is the suit I wore on that day. Vice runs an article where they're like, journalists choking up in tears. I don't even want to go back in the building. 6 months later, it is the most insane garbage. Why? They don't want Trump to come back. They need to say, what are they saying now? A quote from Trump about Hitler. I'm not even going to repeat it. It's like the most absurd fake news. They're desperately trying to maintain the narrative of white supremacy. We're in a lull year. Just you wait next year, 2023, 2024. It is going to be insane. I wouldn't be surprised if these Capitol Police officers pop up all over the country. They arrest people for these communications. They go on forums like, you know, Patriots.win, which used to be the Donald, and they'll say, like, who wants to go commit this act? And then people will say something, and then they'll arrest them. Then they'll make some small, stupid tweet into a massive indictment, and the news will be like, extremists were talking about doing X, Y, and Z. The FBI will say, who wants to do X, Y, and Z? And some guy will be like, sounds cool. And they'll arrest the guy and say he was advocating for this, that, and this. He was planning it. We caught their communications. We can't release those to the public, though. Then they're going to say, Trump is inspiring this. It's going to get worse. If you vote for him, this is what you're going to get.
Black pills falling all over my head. I'm
drowning. I didn't say we were going to lose.
Black pills. It's going to be a struggle.
I didn't say we were going to lose.
It's going to be a struggle.
I said, I'm actually confident watching the media fail. Yeah. Now, they'll try this stuff, but look how pathetic it is.
So sad.
When Oliver Darcy stands there with no blinking. Yeah, but nobody's watching them. The shift is happening. Their power is dwindling.
That's true.
They're going to try it. The federal government's going to try it.
But you know what? They don't need the media anymore. You know why? Because they got your 4-year-old.
That's right. Yeah, you know who said that?
Who said what?
Who said, I got your children.
Oh, no. Who said
Hitler.
That?
Yeah. It's a quote from Hitler.
Oh. Well, they have our children.
You know, I was thinking, you played Civilization. I know you've played Civ before. You can go into a golden age. We're in a golden age right now. That happens when a bunch of great people get together. You can opt to use them to start a golden age, last 20, 30, 40 years.
We are literally in a golden age.
We're in a golden age. The internet video has allowed us to unite all these great minds, so we formed a golden age. Now we're still facing trauma and struggle, but we're in a golden age while we're doing it, so we have these bonuses.
A golden age is basically a period of great economic prosperity and no war. We've been in that for some time.
Great cultural. You can be in a war and still be in a golden age.
Right. Yes. The war in Afghanistan is not a real. It's not like no one's storming the U.S. borders. We don't have Germany bombing America. We are in a series of conflicts. But the general idea is perhaps you can say right now we're not in a golden age because of the conflicts we've seen with China and Russia and international disputes and everything like that. But this country only for recently, I mean, we're now entering the fourth turning. For a long time, we were just, sure, the U.S. goes out and blows stuff up.
Yo, there was 10 years, 1991 to 2001. That was it. That was a golden time period.
No,
didn't have any wars. Gold War was.
Well, you can be in a war.
I understand what you're saying, but like just in practical,
you could be
in
a total war. That's not. And so still have a golden age.
This is a semantic misunderstanding. When I say no wars, I'm talking about the U.S. actually fighting for its survival.
But you could do that during a golden age. Some countries thrive during war in a golden age, like ancient Persia was really in the game. They're extremely, they can move
farther. I'm not talking about the game. I'm talking about the actual historical understanding of a golden
age. The metaphor is you can enter a golden age during war, during a wartime period. And if you do, you're going to be much better equipped to win the war.
All right. So what you're basically saying is that we're all the individual pieces of Voltron.
Yes, forming, and we have formed and to create Voltron.
And we need to come together as Voltron.
It has. It already happened. We're in the golden. Voltron is real now.
Right.
We have the power of Voltron. But there's aliens that are coming, and we need to fight these giant alien creatures.
Right. I just need you to take that sword off the wall, hold it in the air, and yell, I have the power.
I do have the power.
You are He-Man.
I am He-Man.
I have the power.
And you're a Skeletor, and I will fell you.
What do you say, by the power of Grayskull?
By the power of Grayskull.
Damn. I have the power.
You're going back into ancient history based on your birth year. I grew up with that, dude. That was me Saturday mornings.
I'll be Cringer. I'll be your Cringer, baby. That was Cringer? The cat that turned into Battle Cat.
Wait, Cringer was the name?
Cringer, dude.
Dude, I thought you were just saying, like, I'm the cringy guy.
It's tasteful. It's timely.
Oh my God, you're right.
I'm more Orko than anything.
Let's go to Super Chats.
Yes.
My friends. Please tap that like button.
Super chat.
The little like, we have 9,000 likes. It's over 9,000. There it is. Yeah. Tap that like button. Subscribe to this channel. Make sure you go to timcast.com. Become a member because we're going to have a bonus segment.
Does my head always look that big on the screen?
Yeah.
I'm just noticing it in the monitor.
Yeah, you got the biggest head of
We actually have an app where we just like, we shrank it actually.
Look at this.
It's even bigger than it appears.
Tell me if this is what I think it is to you guys. This is from China Xinhua News. It looks like a picture of Tim Pool propaganda.
No, it doesn't.
Look, does that look like Tim with his guns?
It is Tim Pool.
We can do this during the bonus. I want to pull this up during the bonus segment.
I don't have a shirt like that.
Yeah.
I don't have a hat like that.
The guy yesterday had a Punisher shirt on.
That's not. That's from several days before this. That's from a long time
ago. The yellow beanie.
I don't have a yellow beanie.
No yellow beanie.
No, you don't have a yellow beanie, but it's just different enough.
You can't look at a guy with a beanie and be like, it's Tim Pool.
So it's basically a picture of two bureaucrats saying to freedom, and then there's this crazy guy with a beanie on saying, of shooting, and he's got an AR and a pistol, and he's like dancing around all crazy looking in a t-shirt like Tim wear. I mean, it's just very.
He doesn't wear a t-shirt like I'm wearing, dude.
It's not.
I know, it's slightly different than Tim.
You're like, a guy wearing a t-shirt and a beanie is Tim. I'm like,
he's like got the beard of you too, like the short, dark beard.
Dude, my millennial wife.
Ian keeps trying to claim that I'm the basis for all these memes.
I think China's like, memeing you. Dude.
No, they're not. I'm not that influential. Ian's like, yo, you don't see this meme?
But it's your archetype.
I'm like, no, it isn't. You see that meme? It's you. I'm like, no, it's like, it isn't. It's dude, like the these memes aren't me.
It's the archetype of the hipster beanied skater.
No, it isn't.
And they love it.
It's just a crazy looking guy who happens to be wearing a beanie, yo.
It's all of the above.
Okay, so I'll tell you this. Now, at any point, for any reason, if someone's wearing a beanie, Tim Pool.
He's got your beard.
100%.
No,
every time I wore a beanie all winter, it was because I was Tim Pool.
Yeah, I remember one time, me and Jack were walking down the street, and Jack was wearing a beanie, and I wasn't, and someone was like, yo, you're Tim Pool to Jack.
Person.
You grew a beard, dude. And then I was like, actually, I'm like, oh, he was wearing a beanie, so I just assumed.
Oh, yeah.
My millennial wife just sent me a text. She goes, WTF is a Voltron.
Yes.
All right, let's read the super chats. Hayden says, closing on my 40 acres of raw forest.
Yes, Hayden.
Want to build a small, close-knit community. Do you guys have any tips for getting started? All trees and large rocks, but has natural springs and a power line on the corner of the property near swimming holes, too.
Heck, yeah.
I like geodesic domes. I hear they're cheap and easy and structurally sound to build.
Timber framing, dude. That's the way.
I don't know exactly what you should do. I do know that I thought it'd be cool if you got like-minded people to just start building up towns. So, like, there's a few towns that have been dying because the railroads are shutting down.
Yeah.
And internet video is a way to revitalize these towns by bringing money back into the community. And then you could basically, like, I thought about this. Go to a small town that's dying. Then you can hire the carpenters, you can hire the janitors, you can hire the plumbers, you can hire the workers, the shops. All of a sudden, now there's money coming in from advertising into this town, which brings the whole economy back. Yeah. Then you encourage entrepreneurs to develop technology, software, bring those towns back to life.
My tip for you is to join the Liminal Order, buddy. We've got a whole homesteading crew. We even have a whole collection of people in Eastern Tennessee that have been coming together. And we had a guy join the LO, find land in Tennessee, find a cattle rancher to get his cattle, find the guys in the LO that come and did a fence raising and a penning in one day on his entire property, just like the Amish would come raise your barn and build it all in one day.
Community.
It's amazing. You need community. Even as isolated as you are, you still need community. Talk to Joe Norman about localism. He'll get you sorted.
I love it.
All right, Hayden says, I'm also going to be starting a YouTube channel, too, and documenting the process of buying land and the building and setup that's going to take place. as well as drinking beer at the swimming holes at the end of the day. It's going to be a blast. Sounds nice. Cool, dude.
That last part will be the most successful bit, so stick with that. Anytime.
Trip Sucks says, Jack, I'm a private school science teacher. A while back, you advised me to be a secret agent, but there are no boards, course materials up to the department. The history and English teachers use CRT. What do I do?
You have to keep going, man. You have to keep going, and you can't give up because you have to find like-minded people, and you have to keep spreading the message, and you can't back down. So you got to use your own curriculum. You got to use your own ideas. That's what they did at the beginning. That's what you're going to have to do now. Keep teaching the science and stay strong. And if you need a network of people, hook up with people to support you behind the scenes. You cannot do it alone. Another reason why the liminal order exists.
Are you in a one-party consent state? If you're not, perhaps there you should definitely check, but maybe you could actually just film with your phone if they're doing CRT. Yeah. I'm not going to tell people to do that because there's laws on filming people.
Check
like
with
that.
Your state.
Look, look. I just had this argument with somebody on Twitter today. As I was executive director of charter school districts, I've run schools, I've turned around schools, I've built new schools. We designed our classrooms and told our teachers and our students to expect to be observed at any time.
Yes.
We put big window panes, huge picture windows outside the classroom so that anybody could observe. They were told to expect anybody walking in at any time to observe them at any time. Parents, administrator, local official, prospective parent, anybody. Anyone who pushes back and says that education cannot be filmed or broadcast or recorded or observed at any time is trying to manipulate your children. Do not stand up for that. Do not allow it. Do not permit it. It's a public good with public kids, with children.
All right. Pacific Nationalist says, Jack Murphy, since the first time you were on Timcast, I've improved myself and come up with this. Run 5 miles and work out every day. Build a skill and find a hobby. Be a better man. Not just a man, but a better man. Be a warrior.
Amen to that. Thank you so much for those kind words. I appreciate it. That kind of stuff that keeps me going. Please check my Twitter feed for more of that. I do a lot of fat shaming online. A ton. But I'll tell you what I do more of is praising people on the right track. So get on the right track. Congratulations to you. 5 miles a day, man. That's baller. Good for you, dude.
Ryu Woodware says, the guest yesterday said, quote, do you really want to have kids in this environment? That is the exact premise of the movie Idiocracy. That's right.
Do you want to have kids in this environment? 100%. In fact, you should have as many as you possibly can. I heard about your guests on last night. I don't know exactly all the things that they talked about, but the general gist I got was that they were not big fans on marriage.
No.
I disagree, actually. One guy said in the bonus segment that he would give up all of this dating stuff and being a high-value male if it would bring back the traditional family.
Well, all you got to do.
The other guy said, nah, he likes where he's at. He earned it. He leveled up.
Yeah, he leveled up. But when you're 29 and 30, leveling up is one thing. When you're 40, leveling up is another. When you're 50, leveling up is yet another thing.
They both agreed that the destruction of the family is killing society.
100%.
Yeah.
But you don't have to be a victim as a man. If you want a family, there are women out there that want a family too. And the number one way to protect yourself against divorce, rape, and losing your assets, and losing your kids and all that thing is to be the best man that you can possibly be. And until you are the best man that you can possibly be, all this other crap is just whistling bull crap. It's just excuses. Become the best man that you can be, and then let me know what happens to you in your life.
All right. Crimson 7 says, Tim, you should do a documentary series on the victims of these riots / Chaz to combat the one on Jan 6. And welcome back, Jack. And have y'all heard anything about the Biden earlobe stuff? Well, first, let me say that's a great, great idea. Actually, I think we'll start seeing if we can get that going. It would be really fantastic to produce like 13 videos. Just find somebody whose business was destroyed in one of the riots.
Yeah.
And profile them for 10, 15 minutes. Like, what's your life like? What happened? Tell us your story.
Oh, dude, so we do a lot of traveling for my son's baseball tournaments and my daughter's regattas and such. And so we go to these small towns. And the first thing Rochelle Redhen does, she looks up. She investigates what restaurant can we go to? What bars can we go to? What distillery can we go to? It is the saddest thing that we're seeing now. We're going to all these towns all across the Mid-Atlantic and the South, from New York all the way down to Georgia. And every time that we've been like going to a new city and we're looking up the top 10 restaurants, we go to 5 of the top 10, all closed.
Yeah.
All closed from COVID. All just shut down. Couldn't survive. Couldn't make it. Nothing. It's tough, man.
What's this earlobe stuff?
I have no idea what the earlobe stuff is.
All right, well then.
Let's make up a story, though.
Yeah, okay. Joe Biden was boxing Evander Holyfield and bit his ear. Yeah, all right.
Right. Take out the piercings.
Quiet Guitarist fan says, hey, Jack, looking for more media to consume that talks about masculinity and being masculine. Do you have any recommendations?
Yes, 100%. You should listen to all my content, Jack Murphy Live on YouTube. Spencer Clavin does a great job of talking about masculinity from his particular perspective.
Talked about philosophy.
If philosophy as well. I'm releasing, in conjunction with Michael Millerman, the renowned philosopher, a 7-part lecture series on masculinity through philosophy from the ancients all the way through to current times. You should check that out. That'll be coming out soon. Follow my feed. I recommend and retweet people on masculinity all day long.
Eric A. says, like in the new articles from TimCast, but on your Kyle Rittenhouse story, the people are referred to as protesters. They did $50 million in damage. Protesters don't do $50 million in damage. Rioters do. You are correct, good sir. That's why we have the corrections at TimCast.com, so you can send those in. But I agree. Whenever I read stories and it's like protesters, I go, nope, rioters. So the challenge is, of course, trying to stay on top of every single writer and every single framing is not going to be super easy, but I will absolutely convey that with our relatively small team. Come on, guys. If they rioted and did damage, they're rioters. And, you know, determining that threshold for framing is not always super easy. If you have 100 people holding hands and singing and one guy throws a brick, is it a riot? Probably not fair to say it's a riot. If 10 people throw bricks, is a riot? I think at that point it's probably fair to say it's a riot.
And a riot could be a type of protest. So that can get confusing too. Not all riots are protests, but some can be.
I'm saying they level up, right? So if you have 100 people singing, holding hands and singing songs, you're protesting. They're protesting. If 10 of them start throwing bricks and bottles and explosives, I would not call it a protest anymore. I would call it a riot. Because those people who are there have every option to either leave or stop those people from doing it, but they don't.
But what if they're like protesting a crackdown, authoritarian military crackdown, and they're like trying to blow up, you know, authoritarian machines?
Yeah, it's a riot.
But they're also protesting the authoritarians.
It's a riot.
So it's both.
Sure, but the framing is a riot.
Yeah, don't leave
out
that it's
a riot. The problem is that at any one moment in Washington D.C. during the summer last year, there were peaceful protesters, there were bystanders, there were observers, and there were rioters, and they were all in the same place.
Yeah, riots not a peaceful protest, that's for sure.
They're rioting, but that's why I'm saying, like, figure out the framing isn't easy. But if you have 100 people who are all wearing shirts saying Trump bad, and they're holding hands and singing, they're protesting. If they lay down, they're protesting. If they block the street, they're protesting. If 10 of them start throwing explosives, all of them are in a riot.
Yes.
It is a riot now.
Yes.
I'm saying if one guy did it, I wouldn't call it a riot. I'd say some crazy guy threw something.
Yeah.
The protesters in Portland had the option to back away, stop these people, you know, back away or stop these people. Instead, they linked arms and protected them. They linked arms in front of them and said, no, we're moms. I'm like, okay, you are rioters.
Yeah, they joined the riot at that point.
Absolutely. But even if they weren't linking arms and blocking the cops, standing there singing songs in support of a diversity of tactics that includes smashing windows and throwing explosives, you are all in a riot. That's it.
Diversity of tactics.
I looked up the Biden earlobe thing.
What
apparently conspiracy theorists say that changing earlobes prove Biden clone. We'll have to look into that.
No, awesome. Maybe in the bonus segment. I don't know about that stuff.
Love it.
A little too much for me.
That's exciting.
Red Run, what does it say? Rumex?
Rumex?
Red Rumex says, I sued my employer for wrongdoing. I was not sure I would win, but I knew I was right and would not let them step all over me. They tried to bully, intimidate, make me resign. I defied them and won.
Woo! That is awesome.
Yes.
Congratulations.
Love stand up for yourself. That.
Love to hear
it. Wow. Matt Bowler says, audio messages are not better than texting. They are easily translated to text and interpreted by a machine, then flagged for review.
Okay, but does the recipient have to do that?
Right.
I mean,
you're saying there's less chance the recipient's going to misinterpret?
Yeah, or just giving your recipient, like, you got to put 3 more layers of difficulty into there. It's not a secure, but it's, like, more than just a text message. Mr. Frickin' Hair Splitter over there. Good grief. Also, if somebody picks up my phone and looks at it, they're also not going to see what I had written there either. So,
yeah. Psh, 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 psh. Red Rumix says, get Sticks on the show. Oh. Sticks is always welcome
on
the show.
Open invite.
Sticksenheimer 965 or whatever.
666, yeah. Sticksenheimer 666.
Yeah,
oh,
close,
there we go.
Close.
Sorry.
I'm like, those are easy numbers to remember, only. Jack.
I didn't want you to get banned for talking about devil stuff.
It's like the most devil-y devil name, too. Yeah.
Sticks.
Is he the one who says every day, today is going to be crazy?
No, that's Comfortably Smug.
Oh, okay.
That's about all.
Today's going to be an insane day,
yes.
He said.
James Nelson says, Henry Ford created the 5-day work week and livable wage. You've bought into the lie. Labor movement in U.S. was started by Bolsheviks.
Okay.
Say what now?
That's a hard statement.
That was that. There was a lot of conflict in that sentence.
Yeah,
I think.
No.
Henry Ford,
Bolsheviks, gave time off.
That sounds good to me.
These are all horrible things.
I like time off.
Damn communists getting us a weekend. God gave you a weekend, dog.
Not everything about the theory of communism is necessarily bad. It's just not practical,
it's
right?
Too spicy for us.
All right, Balian says, Tim, if you ever got the chance to interview Trump, would you? Who would your co-host be, and why would it be Jack Murphy? yes to interviewing Trump.
Yeah.
But you remember, you see what Dave Rubin had to do? Like long bleeps? We would be able to do it live.
We'd have to do it.
Trump would be like, listen, the thing that happened with the.
Yeah. Wait.
A special
Timcast.com. That whole thing with Rubin was a joke, right?
What, bleeping Trump?
Yeah.
No, you had to go on his locals to actually see what Trump said.
Oh, no kidding.
YouTube would have
deleted. He actually talked to Trump?
I thought he did, yeah.
So, oh, yeah. You know what? I just saw that and assumed it was fake.
Oh, interesting.
It was on the phone, right?
Oh,
yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, I thought it was just a whole joke, a whole just bit.
No.
He just put Trump up and like asked the question and then just used sound bites or whatever. Sorry, Dave. Hey, nice scoop, bro.
Oh, maybe I'm wrong, but I thought he interviewed Trump and he had to bleep out a ton of stuff.
I have no idea. I didn't even
go on locals.
I don't consume too many. Sorry, Dave. Yeah, go on locals.
That's why when Bannon was here, you know, there was a really funny point where he started talking about a certain thing. And then I was like, what's just holding? He was like, don't worry, I'm not going to say the magic words. And I'm like, I don't know if that matters to YouTube. They're just like, you're getting a little close to the sun, buddy. They're going to hit that ban button. But the bonus segment with Bannon.
Oh, wait, Icarus? Something with an I word flying too close to the sun?
With his wax
wings? When the bonus segment with Steve Bannon.
Yeah, I bet that was
the first thing I asked is what YouTube will ban everyone for. Right. And we just went right into it. So I'm not going to repeat it. We're going to read more Super Chats. Just so you guys know. Go to timcast.com. Become a member.
Icarus can cure.
You'll find
COVID.
No, that's not true. Go to a doctor.
That's right.
You literally can't say that.
Yeah.
Icarus.
You can't say that.
It's Greek mythology.
It doesn't matter. You can't say that. No joke. Yeah. We could get
no non sequiturs.
There's no joking about this, dude. They've taken
even
down
if you
Crowder.
Said, like Superman can do it.
Yes.
That's just effectively what I said.
Yes. They took down Crowder for citing CDC guidelines. So it's like we've had people on the show where I'm like, hey, like, no, you can't like make jokes about this stuff. Like, okay. And they do anyway. And it's like these people seem to think that YouTube is not sitting there with their finger over the ban button saying, I want to effing destroy these people.
I thought we were flying under the radar, but we're not.
No, you have to encourage everybody to go see their own doctor and ask them for advice.
100%.
And you're not allowed to joke about it.
No joking.
Nope.
Icarus.
Yep. Bad. YouTube is straight up like that's it. So, you know, but when the day comes, it comes. That's why we're advocating for TimCast.com. That's why we have these conversations exist on platforms that we can have them exist on, and they're getting more and more views. All right. Rocky Range says, Tim, George Washington, who also lived in Virginia, freed his slaves on his deathbed. After he freed his slaves, Virginia passes a new law banning the freeing of slaves in one's will. Thomas Jefferson didn't free his slaves because it was illegal. All right. Well, there you go. Hey, stand corrected.
Sense-making apparatus. Wow.
Billy Bob. Baba Ganoush says Luke is not Slavic. To be politically correct thing to say is he's Slavics with an X.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I'm tracking.
I couldn't believe it when Biden actually audibly said Latinx or whatever he said. He actually said the word out loud that people have only written.
Goofy Foot says Jack Murphy makes Chuck Norris look like a bearded woman.
I'll take that as a compliment, I think.
That's great, yeah.
Yeah, it's big.
Okay, good. Sorry, Chuck.
All right. Canadian A says, hey, Tim, I just wanted to shout out Shad from Shadiversity and Game Nights. He's an author and YouTuber. I'm just a fan, but he's doing a great job creating culture. He's conservative, but that's secondary. Check it out. Is he the guy who has, like, swords and stuff?
I don't know. Never heard of this guy.
Yeah, maybe I've seen him. All right, let's see what we got. Let's scroll down. It's going to do a YouTube super chat. Do a big jump on me because they just load instantly. Super jump. Catoriously Wise says, about the draft of the Declaration, during those times, a potential jail sentence has to work on a ship or in the American colonies. I think this is what was referred to since the crown, i.e. the king, through the court, that has sentenced the prisoner. I don't know. Like, I read a bunch about it, and they said that he was referring to slavery, not referring to jail sentences. He was saying that he, like violated human nature or something like that, like people who have never offended him or something like that. Whatever. All right, let's see. Darth Vader says, cancer-free as of today. Tough 2 years, but anyways, just wanted to say what's up and keep up the good work, guys. Jack, I'm a huge fan, man.
Thank you. And congratulations to you, man. Way to fight through that.
Yes. Absolutely. All right. Oh, I can't read that one. Mr. Obvious says, we are getting banned and demonetized. We are being snuffed out just slowly. That's right. It's called pressure. The goal is not to ban people outright because they know that creates ripples and waves. The goal is to push down slowly until they're underground.
Mm-hmm.
Every time someone looks, they see you an inch lower, but they're like, looks same to me. Seems fine.
The era of remonetization is upon us.
They want it to seem like you're just failing. You know, people just don't like your videos anymore.
Sorry, guys.
Now, the challenge is, that's why I always say, share this show. Share these clips, share this show, share the podcast, subscribe to it, because they will try to suppress it. But if you are sharing it with your friends and family, they can't. And they'll keep trying, but the people are pushing back.
I heard one of the shows we did last week was about, I think it was about Facebook. And the title said Facebook something something. And someone shared it on Facebook and immediately got their account suspended.
Probably.
Just because of the name of the video. Yes.
Facebook refused to give us partner program access on any of our accounts.
It was like
saying
Zuckerberg.
It was not real. They said we didn't create it. It wasn't original content. And we were like, it's their show. We have a show. It's a podcast. It's actually a top iTunes podcast. And they were like, not original. Bye-bye. Got an email back. I was like, we're sorry we can't help you. It's just we don't have the apparatus. Like, there's no structure at Facebook for actually dealing with this. You'll have to go through the automated system. They were basically saying the clips we were uploading, which only appear on Facebook in that format, were unoriginal.
Is that because...
Even though it's like your face speaking words out of your brain?
Yep.
So unoriginal.
Yep.
I wonder if we do it as ads, if they'll do it then.
No. What they're claiming is that we're taking someone else's show and putting it up.
Not that it's repeating the same show that you own.
No, they're saying we're taking someone else's. It would be like if I just upload episodes of The Simpsons. Right. Yeah.
Live.
It's BS.
I don't even go on Facebook at all anymore.
I barely touch it at all. Only for messaging. And even then, I'm like, why am I using Facebook messaging?
Delete that, dude.
Yeah. That's tracked. And although I have like saved messages from 2010 that I sent that are still accessed sometimes.
Can't be that important.
Kevin Kelly says, rip He-Man. The new Netflix He-Man show makes He-Man the bad guy and gives Teela a new girl power haircut and makes her the main character.
I mean, is there not a better character name for the new He-Man than She-Man?
It would have been great.
Wasn't it She-Ra?
Yeah, it was She-Ra. But the new character has to be She-Man.
Dude, have you seen the documentary about the creation of He-Man? It's one of the best documentaries in the world. It's incredible. Yeah.
About Skeletor and He-Man.
Yeah, the guy.
And Power of Grayskull and all that.
I'm going to have a hard time recalling
anybody. Oh, check it out. Check it out.
Checking it out.
James Nelson says, He-Man needed a magic sword to have power. Thanks to Kevin Smith's woke He-Man, we now know Teela had the power the whole time and just needed him out of the way to realize it.
What? Of course.
Kevin Smith is involved?
Is that for real?
No.
He's like, I never had the power in the first place. It was always you somehow giving it to me or something.
Do you remember Clerks? Do you remember watching that in black and white?
Yeah, it's hardcore. Yep.
Would you have predicted that those guys would go woke?
No, I would have thought he would have done more LSD.
Yes, I think so.
Really? From watching Clerks?
These look, man, people just want things. Very few people have principles.
Yeah. Dude, I want to talk about this He-Man thing.
That's why it's like, dude, the last people you can accuse of being grifters are people who are like, I'll tell you this. You want to criticize Conservative Inc.? Okay, maybe I understand that. They make money. You want to like Dave Rubin? They're like, he's grifting. I'm like, he could have just stayed with the Young Turks and continued to do the mainstream show. Why would he choose to be in the out-group? Why would he choose to put himself at risk? He succeeded in spite of these things.
Big risks.
Dude, I continuously put myself in the out-group of the out-group, and still people call me grifter.
Mm-hmm. Wow. There's no escaping.
I could just make a mind. Like, I could do four. Like, so what people need to understand about success is like, do they think that people who are willing to work 100-plus hours a week or whatever are only succeeding because they've chosen to talk politics? If I was going to work this hard and really want to make money, why wouldn't I just say whatever Amazon wanted me to say?
Right.
They're the ones with the money.
Right.
Who am I supposed to make money from?
You specifically are playing on like elite, advanced, double, extra, plus expert level when you really could just do it much easier. All you have to do is sell stuff that just makes you like get laid more, get paid more. If you just focus on that, that's how you make money in the men's space, that's for sure.
Mm-hmm. Charles Balyozian says, great insight, Ian. The Young Turks are awful. Also, to Biden's credit, he acknowledged the Armenian genocide, but still sends Azerbaijan rockets to continue genocide.
Jeez. Hey, well, I don't think they're awful. I didn't say that. But I think that there have been a lot of awful things surrounding them lately. I think Cenk is like losing his mind after the Hillary Clinton email scandal.
It's not that. It's that these people on the left who were like, I believe in these things. The NSA is bad. The FBI is bad. All of a sudden now we're confronted with a mainstream establishment left saying, say the opposite of everything you just said or we'll throw you out.
Yeah.
And so now their brains just
right.
twisted.
And I see it in Cenk because he's on TV so much talking. As you can see, like his own, like he's twisted and it's not his fault, but he's been twisted by the media.
It's simple. It's like, there's a reason why people like Rubin, Jimmy Dore leave. There's a reason why people like Glenn Greenwald are accused of changing. He accuses me of changing. It's like, bro, we've all been in the same place, but we are not tied to corporate sponsors and investors. I wonder if what really happened is these people left, were able to speak their minds and be free. And as the world changed around them, they maintained their principles and they started calling out the problems. But Cenk is trapped under the boot of a corporation with investors, with demands. And so he's sitting there like slowly drifting away like, I have to say these crazy things.
Wow.
And think about how angry you would be. Imagine this, Jack. Imagine if someone came to you and said, literally, everything you've done, everything you've built will be stripped and taken away from you. Well, your harm will come to your family. You have to say what we want you to say. So depending on, you know, like you're standing there like feeling the intense pressure of being forced to say something you know is not true. Cenk isn't strong enough to say no to it.
Well, since I've already been in that exact situation before and elected to say exactly what I thought was on my mind, let the chips fall where they may, I can't relate to Cenk being a little bitch in that regard.
Yeah, because they'll say these, and then you'll be like, I don't want to do it, I don't. And then finally one day give in, and then the next day they're going to be like, okay, now do it again.
Right.
And it's like, what, this is my life? This is what my life is.
It's the same principle shilling. Behind not apologizing for that stuff, too.
What's this corporation, the parent corporation of Young Turks? Are they owned?
Well, I think they have investors. They have like big, powerful investors and things like that. I don't
know. You
know,
when
sure,
you
though.
Said that about him being boxed in, do you remember in the end of which Superman? I can't remember where like the three evil.
The second one.
Sent to the Phantom Realm.
They all get like boxed into like the little crystal thing and it like just.
And they're like, whoa.
Yeah, it just scatters off into space. That's what's happening to Cenk right now.
Yeah, I can see it.
But he's losing it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
He's watching. He can't say any of these things because he's a tribalist. He's not principled. So there are people with principles like Jimmy Dore who will be like, here's what I believe. And then when the left goes nuts or the Democrats go nuts, he'll be like, screw that. There are people like Glenn Greenwald who are principled. Now, my criticism of Glenn Greenwald in the past is that he's activist-y and he is more political than, you know, like 10 years ago, I said, this guy, he's coming out, he's publishing these things, but he's always been an opinion guy. That's fine, but he's principled. So when the Democrats go nuts, he calls them out. When the FBI goes nuts, NSA, he's always criticized these groups.
How even when his own publication lost its way, he was like, I'm out.
Yeah, exactly. Because they're like, you cannot force me. But what happens when you're the head of a major company with everyone staring at you saying, we believe this, believe it or else?
Well, I mean, isn't that exactly what happened to
Vice?
To Glenn?
Oh, yeah.
At Intercept?
Yep. And Glenn walked away.
And he walked away. So, Cenk, be half the man that Glenn Greenwald is. Glenn see how that works.
Glenn had lost control of the company at that point. Cenk, I think, I would imagine, still owns
He has control. Lost control of his own mouth.
Mm-hmm.
Damn. This is unconfirmed, right? No one knows that he's being coerced to say things.
I'm saying, in my opinion, the fact that he is towing the line for the establishment while pretending to be a progressive
seems so
shows
weird.
That he is trapped in a box. People on the left, why is it so hard to get many of these people to appear on this show? Or the grifters will always try. I always say that too. Like, there are legitimate left personalities who are like, I won't go on the show because I will get attacked for it. There's no upside. Then you get the grifters who are like, have me on the show. And they have like really low view counts and they're really desperate for attention. And I'm like, bro, you're grifting. I get it. We're not going to give you airtime. And we want to have this legitimate person on, but they're scared they'll get canceled. Conservatives are like, I demand you have me on the show. When are you going to have me on the show? I want to be on the show.
It's true.
It's like you go to a Trump rally.
Is that right?
You go to a Trump rally. Walk up with a camera and a microphone to a Trump supporter and be like, hey, do you want to answer some questions? They'll be like, sure. Go to a Democrat rally.
No.
No, don't. I can't advise that because I can get sued if someone gets hurt.
I can't believe people call you up and they're like, I demand to be on the Tim Pool IRL.
They don't demand, but they're like, yeah, when are you gonna have me
when
on?
Are we on,
like, it's a given, let's
when
go
are we
well,
on?
What I mean is conservatives, unless there's an issue of like they're busy, will be like, I'd love to do an interview.
Oh, yeah.
People on the left are like, why? No, I can't do it.
KG,
that's it. Anyway, my friends, if you haven't already, you got to smash that like button.
Smash it.
Go to timcast.com, become a member, because we're gonna have a bonus segment coming up. at about 11. We're going to talk about those things that YouTube will ban us for. And yeah. You can follow this show on Facebook and Instagram at TimCastIRL. Help share our videos so that we can leverage those networks to get people to go to the website. Also, we've been on TikTok. We've been blowing up on TikTok.
That's going really well.
Yeah, like huge. Like videos are getting hundreds of thousands of views.
Different demographics. It's pretty cool.
Younger people, apparently, which is good news. Got to reach those young
who's
people.
Who's doing your TikTok clips?
We got a guy. What do you mean?
Not me. You got a guy.
I need the same.
Yes.
I did a great job.
I saw the clips on Instagram now. I'm like, all right, yes. There we go. Hook it up. Come on. A follow on that.
I got to say, the dude that's doing the clips, you're doing a really good job.
Talented.
Yes.
Very talented. So, but we're getting access to those young people, and apparently middle-aged women are on TikTok. So hey, that's good. So
middle-aged white women are like my main demographic.
those are my girls, man.
My mom.
But don't forget, you can follow me at TimCast. You can subscribe to this channel, share with your friends. Jack, you want a shout-out?
I do. My name is Jack Murphy. I have all kinds of things. I have the Jack Murphy Live Show. It's on YouTube. I'm Jack Murphy Live on every social everywhere. Please follow me on Twitter, on Instagram. Come down, sign up for the liminal order. If you are a man between the ages of 20 and 60, or a little bit on either side, you believe in masculinity, brotherhood, and sovereignty, and you want an answer to all these problems that we're talking about and a team to support you, Liminal Order, come down, check us out. We take 50 new guys a month.
Oh, that's awesome. Well, thanks for coming, Jack.
My pleasure. It's so good to be back. I can't believe I missed as much time as I did.
It's nice.
We're back on the regular schedule. No more summer crap. No more weird things. We're here. I miss my man, Freedom Tunes. We got to get Seamus.
We're supposed to have the Illinois boys.
Illinois boys.
You're going to get real, dog.
Yeah. We didn't even talk about my engagement. We didn't talk about Miami. We didn't talk about any of these things.
When's the big day?
Big day is going to be in the fall of 2022. Can't wait.
It's fantastic, man.
Thank you so much.
Shout out,
Beba.
I'm Ian Crossland. Hit me at Ian Crossland. Thanks for bringing up He-Man. That was awesome.
And yeah, I'm well out of this He-Man stuff, but thank you very much, Jack, for coming back.
My pleasure.
Happy to see you again, back on our old routine.
Yes.
You guys can follow me at Sour Patches on Twitter as I attempt to get more followers than Sour Patches.
How far away are we?
I'm pretty close. I think they have 92 and I have about 80.
There we go.
Close, yeah.
There we go.
And then we can mock and ridicule Sour Patch Kids.
Yes.
And we'll get a bunch of bags of them and we'll throw them around and laugh. I love Sour Patch Kids.
I used to eat a lot of Sour Patch Kids.
I used to go to the corner store and it was one penny per Sour Patch Kid. So I'd be I'd hand them a dollar and they'd give me this bag, insane amount of Sour Patch Kids.
Wow.
Anyway, go to TimCast.com, become a member. We'll have a bonus members only podcast coming up with Jack around 11 p.m. or so. Thanks for hanging out and we will see you all there.
Bye, guys.